It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Holy cow, what a week it has been. The new iPhones are coming out on Friday. Jim Dalrymple joins us. He's had it for the last couple of weeks. His review, the new iPad Mini 4, Watch 2.0. A whole lot to talk about. Jim, Andy, and Renee in Mac Break Weekly are next. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 473, recorded Tuesday, September 22nd, 2015. Jason's missing sock. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Corning Optical Cables. Corning's incredibly durable Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 optical cables are longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to corning.com/twit and use the promo code TWIT to save up to $50 on USB 3.0 optical cables. And by 99designs. Working with an individual graphic designer has its limitations. Choice is one. You want dozens of designs to choose from. And as little as 7 days, well, then go to 99designs.com/twit. And you'll get a $99 upgrade of services free. And by LegalZoom. If you're looking to incorporate, form an LLC, get a trademark or more, LegalZoom can help you get started the right way. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but can connect you with an independent attorney. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW in the referral box at checkout for your special discount. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. And today is a very big day for Apple. We're 2 days, 3 days away. I actually have been doing a countdown in my head. 3 days away from the final shipping day of the iPhone, unless you're in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Because the Pope is going to slow it down. You won't get it till Monday. And we have a great panel to discuss that. Lots of Apple news, including a kind of stunning report from the Wall Street Journal. But we'll get to that in a second. First, hello, Andy and Nako from the Chicago Sun-Times. Great to have you.
Great. I don't know if you can hear me. I've got the sound muted as much as I can. They're putting in a new grotto in the back. I like the old grotto, but I wanted the new grotto to face a little bit more west. I told them not to do it right now, so I can't even imagine you can hear me over this din. I only hope that this box I spent a lot of money for to counteract it is working.
Sounds like an Audi diesel engine behind you with the emission controls off.
I'm just as mad as you. I can't believe this. But he's like the leading grotto guy in New England. He's booked like for 4 years.
I know. These things happen, Andy. Also with us, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. It is dead quiet in Montreal.
It is, Leo. We sent all our construction team over to the South Bay area for some reason. Yeah. I don't know how that happened.
Well, you know why it's quiet in Montreal? Because winter is coming.
It's always coming, Leo. iPhones are coming.
And finally, to the Southland we go, where Jim Dalrymple is actually getting his toes done. I don't know. Are you getting a pedicure?
they're trimming off the end of the beard.
From the Loop, theloopinsight.com. It's great to have you, Jim. And there's a lot to talk about. I really do want to talk about this really surprising report in the Wall Street Journal that Apple has given a green light to its electric car. But, well, you know what? Let's save dessert for last, because Jim has an iPhone. What do you have, a 6S Plus? 6S?
Both.
Oh, you lucky dude. Oh, it's not rose gold. Don't tell me it's rose gold.
It is not rose gold.
Oh, whew.
Space gray and gold.
Okay. And Renee Ritchie, I bet you somewhere in there have an iPhone lying around, new one.
I do not. They make very little available to Canadians, and Jim is most of Canada, so.
Jim owns the Canadian.
The beard
franchise.
Got one, though. I mean, both Jim and the beard one got one, though, so that's a big attainment for us.
Yeah, the embargo lifted, I would guess, yesterday, because I started to see all the reviews, Walt Mossberg on The Verge, which is weird because Neil I. Patel also had a review on The Verge to enter
Mossberg has its own atmosphere and gravity well. He doesn't matter. He could be doing a buddy comedy with David Pogue. He would still get his own phones.
I have one request for this community. That is, like, every review I watch was like, should you upgrade from a 6 or 6 plus? That is not a question most normal people are asking. Very, very few. Like, I think 20% of people mostly have those phones. Everyone else has an older phone, and they really want some attention too, guys.
Yeah. But it's not an unreasonable thing.
I could make a request too, then, if Rennie is
all right.
Yeah. Don't be morons.
And who are you talking to?
Reviewers.
Oh, good. Okay. And what would you say is moronic?
Reviewers.
In what regard?
I just think that it's okay to find something wrong, and sometimes there is something wrong. You know, there's little things that happen that are bad, but you know, to go out and just nitpick the death out of something is just, I don't think it gives people a good sense of what the product is about.
Right.
You know, I heard people talking about iPhone 6S and 6 and saying, you know, it's an okay upgrade. I don't know if they were using the same phone that I was, or if Apple punked them and gave them a 5S, or I don't know. I don't know what happened.
Well, let's not worry about them because we got you.
Okay.
There's a full article on loopinsight.com, of course. Sounds like you're very happy.
I am. I'm happier than what I thought I would be.
Hmm. Yeah, this is, of course, this is the iterative upgrade. This is the in-between upgrade. The talk of the TikTok cycle. And if you look at the 5S, they added a fingerprint reader. It wasn't a huge upgrade to the 5. This is bigger than that.
As an aside, maybe it's time to stop setting expectations by tick and talk, because usually what we talk about is, does the case design look different or does it not? Because if you just look at the features, I mean, you think about how Touch ID really changed a whole lot of things and made the iPhone so much easier in so many different levels. Yep. 3D Touch is the biggest UI change they've made to iOS, I think, practically since the beginning. And that's not a talk sort of thing. I even get the impression, talking to people at Apple, that even they are getting annoyed that people are implying that every other year is going to be a minor iPhone release.
Yeah.
There's no new colors, it's no new shape. We stayed with the shape we had last year, but we put a whole bunch of new awesome into there.
I think that's fair. This is much more than just an iterative upgrade.
There is, I mean, there's two ways to look at it, because, and even with Intel, who traditionally uses TikTok cycle too, with the die shrink and then the architecture, is that for some people, it's always the talk. They don't care at all about the tick. The design change is meaningless to them. They want the maximization of that model. So they want that new architecture. And with the phone, they're happy to have the new design out of the way, and they want to see what's going to happen with the next year. So I think, I know some people put a negative connotation on talk, but to me, it's always sort of which cycle do you end up falling on? And both of them have their pros and cons.
Let's talk, by the way, just parenthetically, you're absolutely right, Andy. The fingerprint reader was so significant that at this point, I don't want to use a phone that doesn't have one. That may not be an Apple phone, but I do not want to use a phone that doesn't have a fingerprint reader.
Even I extend that to the iPad. I got my first, I bought an iPad mini early this year because my old hardware was just so out of date. I really needed it. And my goodness, every time it asked for Touch ID, I never thought that. I always thought that Touch ID would be, of course, brilliant on something you're holding in your hand, but not necessarily on something you're using on a tablet. It's like bacon. You put it into something, and it just makes it more awesome.
So, Jim, let's talk about 3D Touch, because I have to say, part of the reason I was a little nervous about it is I don't think it succeeds on the watch. It's not intuitive. It's not clear what's going to happen. It's okay on the laptop, but again, it's not intuitive. It's not clear what's going to happen. I'm gathering already from all the reviews that It is a significant upgrade on the iPhone.
Yeah, it really is. I'm trying to get myself in here. It really is a significant upgrade because it actually changes the way that you navigate on the iPhone. So if you look at how you navigate to even an email message, you know, you go into the app, you go into the message, you decide whether you want to reply. you reply to it. You might want to mark it as unread. You go to the menu, you mark it. I mean, there's so many steps, and then all the way back out again. So with 3D Touch, when you're in the app, you just press and hold on the message, and it pops up like a little peek, and it gives you a preview of what the message is. If you decide, yes, this is something I want to deal with right now, you just slide up, and a menu comes up. And you know, it also works in Apple Music, as you see there on the screen. When you slide up, a menu comes up from the bottom that gives you some options of things that you can do to interact with that right now. Now, if you hold on the playlist that I have on there in the screenshot, then it will pop. And that means that you've entered the application if you had have gone all the way in the old way, you would be at that page. So it's very intuitive. It gives you haptic feedback so that when you press, you know it's coming up because it vibrates a little bit on your thumb. So, you know, it's interactive all the way through. And more than just a feature that, I don't know, is cool, you know, and something that you think you might want to use, or, you know, you're going to forget about in the next, you know, month. This is something that you're going to use every day. And what's going to be annoying are the apps that don't have it.
Which right now is everything but Apple, right?
Right. And not even all of the Apple apps have it. Oh. I mean, Pages, Numbers, Keynote, none of those apps. Or at least they don't have the quick actions.
What are you guys hearing? Are developers going to jump on this, you feel?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, developers are going to. I mean, I already know some that are doing it. There are some apps in beta already that are doing it.
Yep. Ken K showed off the OmniFocus 3D Touch already, and Apple showed off Instagram and some others at the event, and they look really keen.
Yeah, and I'm hearing a lot from developers as well. Between the iPad Pro and 3D Touch, there's a lot of companies add features that are really, really nice, and some will even add features that even make apps look better. Apple is the one that consistently creates new stuff that gets developers really creatively buzzed about what they found hard to do or implement a year ago that now seems so natural and easy for them to do. So,
so am I wrong in thinking that this is not really the same thing as Force Touch on the wristwatch or the MacBook?
It's similar technologies. It gets implemented differently because the screen size is much larger, and you can't really do it the same way. But because you have the bigger screen, they did something really clever. And it's always, how are you going to use this new technology that matters? And they made it, and the best description I can come up with it is they made it a way to fold space and create like a little wormhole in iOS. So instead of just tapping an app and then tapping a feature, you press right through the icon and into that feature that you want to get to. Instead of tapping a list item and getting an email, tapping a data detector link and getting a map preview or a web preview, you tap right through that link or that item, and you peek out at it, you preview it, then you tap a little more, and it pushes you all the way into that app. And I only spent 30 minutes with it, not like what Jim's had for 2 weeks, but it gives you that visceral feeling of there is a layers to this interface, and I can push my way right through them. I don't have to swipe and swipe and swipe and swipe and swipe sideways, swipe in, swipe back, tap, 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 tap. I'm just basically pushing, and the more I push, the deeper and deeper I get, and I can let go at any time and pop right back. And it makes everything, they call it an accelerator in the framework, that it makes the UI faster. And that's really the sense I got. And it's another step with continuity and extensibility that stops us having to hunt around home screens looking for widgets or apps, and just brings all that content to us right where we are. And it's a perceptive thing, but humans are perceptive, so that it becomes a very real feeling of speed.
And I think it's more than a feeling of speed. I think it is speed, because I deal with things a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. Something comes in, I press, I peek on it. And Leo, think of it. You get an email from Jason that says, important. And, you know, you see that. And the first thing you do is you go to mail and you have to open the app. Right in.
You have to find it. Yep.
But if you had peek, you just look, you tap on it, and it says, important, I lost my sock. Uh-huh. And you could say, well, I don't need to deal with that.
I tell Leo those kinds of things all the time.
Pop on a notification?
No.
Okay.
No, but...
That would be nice if you get a notification of Jason's sock mail. that if I could peek and poke on that. I'm just thinking. I mean, look.
Well, no, no, future, no, not, future not, products,
not,
Leo.
Yeah, not, not peek and poke. Don't poke your
peek
your messages.
Peek and pop. Like,
don't poke your messages.
Show title.
Snap, crackle, pop. Yeah. Apple iPhone 6S Plus.
I just love that this is so on trend. On Android and other platforms, we're seeing the trend where we're trying to get people to not have to ever launch actual apps. Don't interact with an app. Interact with a feature within that app. And a great operating system will give you different opportunities to drill down right into that feature. So you don't have to open up Evernote to expose a button for creating a note. You can just 3D touch and drill down into just create a brand new note and then let me back into my life. So these are some of the things that I had been missing from the iPhone that it's really exciting to see it come to this.
Phil Libman, when he was still at Evernote, we did a triangulation with him. And he said, because he says, my job is to think about the future, about trends. And he said, we're headed to a post-application future. And I went, what? Yeah. But that's kind of the beginning of that, because it is really kind of modal. And Apple's been always against modality from the first days of the Macintosh, where you have to go into a mode to do something and then come out of the mode to do something else. It makes much more sense to kind of interact with it that way. I'm excited. I think you're right. This is the first new user interface feature in quite some time. This could be significant. It also sounds like power users will most appreciate it because it will allow them to do things faster.
But look at it this way, too. Like for a while, we had websites, and then now we have web services. So you don't necessarily have to go to a website. There's APIs, like the Twitch website. You don't need the web anymore. You can just go right to those APIs within apps and do a lot of things. We used to have apps, which are these big, lumpy binaries. But thanks again to things like Continuity, things like Sensibility, and the Android versions of those, you unbundle those things, and those features and those functions can be surfaced anywhere. With the Apple Watch, they're even surfacing them on different hardware. Until recently, the logic was running on a completely different device. Than the interface was running. CarPlay still does that. So we're coming into a future where developers are creating functionality, and you can pull those photo filters in here. You can use those share buttons there. You can poke into different apps. I'm getting the feeling that one day I'm going to touch my iPhone, push my finger, and it's going to pop out a gym screen. I think that's just the logical next step.
Yeah.
Careful what pocket you keep that phone in, Jim.
Okay, that's 3D Touch. Camera, you've had 2 weeks to take pictures, Jim. They've 50% more pixels, live photos and others. What do you think of the camera?
So the thing about cameras and the way that people view this is that everybody looks at the same way that they used to look at a CPU. They look at a camera as how many megapixels does it have? Because the more megapixels is going to give me a better picture. But that's not true. It's how you deal with the megapixels and the images once the camera has shot that picture. So Apple's new camera is 12 megapixels, but they added a bunch of technologies in there to allow the picture to actually be better so that there's not a lot of bleeding of colors into other pixels so that everything that you take is going to be exactly like you see it. Now, for somebody that uses a DSLR all the time or something like that. I mean, these pictures here were taken, you know, just in the neighborhood. You know,
I always do this, though. I always take a picture of a bright red flower because red is very difficult for digital cameras to reproduce. This looks quite good.
And look at the background of that picture.
The depth of field is good.
It's kind of blurred a bit. Yeah. And if you look at the shadows on the red to the white and then the shadowing under that, mm-hmm. I mean, it's crystal clear, and when you blow that picture up, it's just amazing to see. So I am not a good photographer. I've admitted that quite readily over the years. As a matter of fact, I suck. But the pictures that I've taken with the new iPhone are actually pretty good. I mean, you know, a real photographer could come out and take a better picture of that flower than what I did, or a better picture of that sunset than what I did. But
I can guarantee you the sunset, they could improve on, but okay, I'm not going to say anything.
You know, that's me. That's the camera that I had, you know.
Well, and that's the real point is even a pro carries a second camera. If the iPhone, and I'm starting to think this iPhone, I'm most excited about the camera, will be the first time I won't need to carry a point and shoot along with my high-end camera. that the iPhone is really, and in fact, I may even, it may be even my go-to camera. It looks so good. What about the 4K video? I want to do live photos first, then we'll talk about 4K video. I'm glad I ordered a 128-gig iPhone because the live photos are twice as big as a normal photo. The 4K video is got to be huge as well. Is the live photo something you're going to leave on, or is it something you're going to turn on when you want it?
You know, it was the live photos was something that was interesting for me because I would take a photo as I normally would.
Oh, they're back. We should mention that Jim's at an AC/DC concert. And
on stage.
Yeah. I'm not pulling a Steve Jobs here. Remember when they announced the iPod Hi-Fi, Steve famously on stage said, "I am throwing out all my high-end audio gear. This sounds so good." No, I'm not saying I'm going to replace my high-end photography gear, but I have a feeling that I'll take a lot more pictures with this iPhone. Yeah. I've always thought the iPhone pictures, this is a very subjective metric, were more pleasing.
Well, it's speed to it's speed to everyday picture. What Apple always optimized for was taking the camera from your pocket and capturing a memory in as high a quality and as fast as possible. And a lot of cameras can take better photos, but they can't get them as fast to you. And a lot of other camera phones can take really interesting photos and do lots of manual work, but they can't always grab a photo very quickly. So this technology, I think, you know, to what Jim was about to say, is you have that phone in your pocket, you take it out, and you get a pretty good picture more and more often. Maybe it was 8 out of 10 times before, 9 out of 10 times now, and they're adding in low light because that was a challenge. And it just, every step, it gets a little bit better.
I've read a number of reviewers complain, though, that you have to remember, there's a switch on the screen that says live mm-hmm. photo. If you have that turned on, you have to remember, you know, a second and a half before, and more importantly, a second and a half after you snap the shot, And several reviewers said, I got a lot of pictures of me putting the phone down, a lot of video of me putting the phone down. So you have to kind of get in the habit of holding it up there for 3 seconds.
Well, and that's true. And I mentioned that in my review as well, that, you know, you do have to wait. And there's an indicator on the screen that says live.
Ah,
so
you know.
It's not like you're counting, you know, when there's an indicator that's on the screen. It says live, and then it goes off. You know it's time to move. So I have 4 or 5 pictures that are, you know, I've taken and dropped my hands too quick, and the live photo shows you dropping your hands.
Right.
Well, you know, you get used to it.
Apparently, Apple says we're going to do a firmware or a software update on the camera that will notice you've done that and just say, okay, forget it.
Yeah.
How many people, how good is the support going to be? We talked about this last week that they said on stage Facebook will support this in their iOS app. Obviously, El Capitan, Mac OS X will support it. The watch will support it, which is interesting. I guess you'll be able to do a new watch face.
You can do now, yeah. You can make a little live
with watch OS 2.0. Do you think we'll see it become a standard? No, it's not going to become
There's an API, Leo. And the nice thing about iOS, the way that Apple makes the software stack, is it becomes almost trivial to add some of these features. So if you can add the proper code to support it and it makes sense for you,
and you're on an iOS device, yeah.
Yeah, but even if you're not on an iOS device, adding that sort of stuff, like very few people do the abstracted code where there's one code base for both their iPhone and Android device. And they can very easily add it to iPhone, and it becomes something that gets them featured, it gets them noticed, or gets some press, or gets some good feelings.
I'd love to see Instagram support it, for instance.
I believe they're going.
Especially cross-platform. Well, it's a Facebook company. And this is a thing, you know, people say, well, you know, Nokia did this first. Zoe's on the HTC One did this, and I loved Zoe's, but HTC One didn't have the market share in the cloud to get Zoe's in a broader sphere. So, and Apple certainly does, and enough people buy these iPhones that there's maybe some hope of that. How about 4K video? The problem with 4K video, of course, is most people don't have any 4K displays, unless it's on their computer. The iPhone itself, even if you have the 6S, is only 1080p. Your TV is probably not better than 1080p. I'm sure it looks great somewhere, but where can you see it on your 5K iMac? And apparently they're quite big.
Yeah, it's off by default too. You have to go and toggle it on so that if you're just casual user and you're not going to have to worry about it. You have to be someone who really wants 4K.
Is there a 1080p 60 frame setting?
Yes.
That would probably be the setting to use most of the time.
They're still bigger, but if you really want that clarity, I think for most people, 1080p, 30 frames per second.
Isn't even that sufficient? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And remember, it's not just about shooting 4K video and then looking at it on a 4K display. I think what I feel like it would be a really Apple move to do is to use that just as a really big pile of data they collect, that the user collected, so that a new version of iMovie can do really interesting camera moves and basically cut a standard high definition video from that, but be able to basically, here are the two people at the birthday party, and cut from here to here to here to here to here to here. Do a zoom in. Do things like a digital zoom that you can't do with a traditional camera.
Amazingly, you can use iMovie on your 4K video and have two different 4K streams and edit it.
They probably talked about the iPad Pro.
Mind-boggling. I mean, you know, for years I'd go to NAB and the whole story was, well, we could shoot 4K video, but we don't really have a workflow for 4K video. And this is on heavy-duty workstation machines. That A9 must be a hell of a processor.
We tried a 4K podcast 2 years ago, and it took us, I think, a day to
It's impossible to edit it. Yeah. And then the front-facing camera. Again, this is an example of a lot of people have done selfie cameras. In fact, that was briefly a trend last 6 months ago. Things change in the Android world to have a great selfie camera. In fact, the Moto X has a flash on the front. Apple's doing something even more interesting. They're using the display as a, I hate to call it a flash, as a brightener. How does that work? Does it flash?
Yeah, it's got a special chip that will make it three times as bright. So it just lights you up.
Briefly or like?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
So when you go to take a picture from the front camera, it recognizes that you're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It senses what the ambient light is around you, and then it will flash the screen appropriately to make sure that the picture is viewable.
I think this is going to be really interesting. Does it do True Tone on the screen?
Yes.
It does. So that's the mixing of light, matching of light to the temperature of the surroundings. Right. So instead of having a big white flash in your face, you know what, Jim? We're going to do it at the AC/DC concert. You and me.
I was going to say, the one bad point about Jim's review is there weren't enough beardies in it.
I'm going to grow a beard by then. It's only 2 days off, but I will.
You know, between my squirrels and Jim's beard, I think that Apple's going to start optimizing for like gray and black fur for the camera. Just like they could be like in Volks, they could Volkswagen the whole results.
Okay, we've done 3D touch. We've talked about the camera. How's battery life been on both the 6S and the 6S Plus, Jim?
It's been about what it was before. I didn't notice a big difference one way or the other. To be honest, it's when I say same as it was before, that's unplug it in the morning. And it just lasts all day long until I go to bed. So
I have to say that's the single, for me as an Android user, considering switching to iOS again, switching back to the iPhone, that is actually the single thing that no Android phone seems to be able to do.
Yep.
And if I can get a phone that will just last all day, that's a big selling point.
I often say nice things about Android on this show, so let me make sure that I also jump in when there's something I absolutely despise about it. I have the new Moto 360 watch.
Oh, you got yours. Mine comes later.
Yeah. This month. And so now I'm in sort of like a dual OS hell where I have to keep my iOS phone for iOS 9 and Apple Watch. And so I've got that tethered via Wi-Fi with my Nexus 5 phone to support this watch.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like the Nexus 5, it reminds me, it was and is my daily Android carry. It's the phone that I own, not the one that's like on loan for 30, 60 days. And it's like, I said this to the phone. I was so annoyed with it like yesterday. Like, I took you off the charger at 11 a.m. today. And I have done nothing with you. You take no phone calls. Occasionally you communicate with this. It is now 6 hours later and you are dead screen. Not just, battery low. You are dead screen. I do not understand how that happens.
Yeah.
Look at your cousin. Made by the technologies available to this planet, just as you were.
You know what it is? It's the OS. It's really plain and simple. It's the OS.
I mean, this has a huge humunga battery, but no company can take advantage of a huge humunga battery like Apple does. And they're not even satisfied with a huge humunga battery. They will still figure out how can we at least tease another. It's like a victory lap. It's like there's no. It's like a high school football with no slaughter rule saying, you know what? We want to beat you guys by 100 points, not just 50 points. So we're going to keep our starters in the game.
To Apple's credit, they seem to understand what people are looking for. And that really. Except for one thing, price. This is a damn expensive phone, and it's not more expensive than it was. But as competitive phones get less and less expensive, that high price tag. And by the way, I think we've all agreed no one should buy the $650 16-gigabyte phone, right?
If you're like a purchaser for enterprise or for education, if you know that you're one of the generation that only ever streams and never downloads anything, like it's almost like you used to say if you were going to get 128 gigabytes, you knew it and no one had to explain to you why. Now it's almost the reverse. If you're going to get 16 gigabytes, it's because you've made an informed decision that your entire workforce or you as a person are only using it for certain tasks that don't require anything.
I guarantee you, though, that's somebody buying a phone for somebody else to use. Yeah. Right?
That's punishment.
That's
the gift bag size. 16 gigabytes.
Well, again, like my mom is going to get this. My mom only uses 8 gigabytes on her current phone, and George's husband only uses 9 gigabytes on his current phone, and both of them decided that they're not going to spend any more to get any more because they just don't need it.
So
all right, they know, though. I mean, that's not that they bought it thinking that that's all. They've used it for a year and know what their usage is now, so it's an informed decision.
Actually, I was listening to... which podcast was it? It was Marco and John Siracusa. So I guess it was Marco's podcast.
ATP.
And they were talking about a study, which I haven't been able to find, by an Apple developer that said that most of his customers, you had 16 gigs.
_ David Smith.
And then he said, of those people, most of them had less than a gig free.
Yeah.
But he also pointed out that people with 64 gigs, which is the next step up, almost always had plenty free. Like, nobody probably needs more than 64
gigs.
It's
a bad line, but I'm hoping that the new Apple purchasing plans and things like it will make it inexpensive. Because still now, $100 is a big difference up front in a price, but if it's between $28 and $29 or $28 and $30 a month, human brains are remarkable rationalization engines, and they'll go, for an extra dollar a month, you know, like, it doesn't look like $100 anymore, so maybe they'll just be inclined to get it.
Well, and the other thing, and I kind of realized this, and I think this is true not just for me spending the company's money for review units, but really for a lot of people, this device is now the most important computer in your life, and you should have a beast. There's no reason to underpower. You should get the most you can because it's the most important computer in your life.
That's the name of my iPhone 6 Plus, Leo, Beast.
I'm so excited.
I mean,
about this.
I agree with you. I mean, I really, especially, it's just the fact that this is a sealed device that you cannot expand in any way, shape, or form ever. And it's not a question. 15 gigabytes is not a problem. It's when you have 16.4 gigabytes of data, that's when this thing starts to become the biggest pain in the butt that you've ever had. And you really wish that you or your department had found an extra piddling $100 to spend on just another 16 gigs.
And 64 is actually quite a bit more. And 64 is plenty. You $100 more, you get four times more memory. And I think 64 is plenty.
Yeah, I kind of wish Apple would make a separate SKU for the 16 the way they used to do for the educational Macs.
Yeah,
just so that you had a visual cue that this was something different.
Yeah. When I maxed it out, and by the way, I'm getting pink.
Me too. It's the only acceptable
color. So for $1,000 with tax.
Yeah, and think of it in terms of you can either have an iPad Pro with a pencil, or you can have this little pocket phone.
I know
there's no like direct equivalency between you're paying per square inch, but it's still such a disconnect when you're thinking, I know how important my phone is. I know that I'm going to be interacting with so much, but it's a
if I could put another 2 gigs of RAM in it, I'd pay $200.
Yeah.
If only Apple would put a phone app on the iPad Pro, that would just solve all these problems.
Well, if they only put a better chip,
I feel like a ghetto blaster, Leo.
Why don't they have a better camera on the iPad Pro? It kind of baffles me.
A 4K camera would be really nice on a device that can edit 4K video.
Yeah. Right? Anything else, Jim? We talked about 3D touch. We talked about the camera, the front and the back. Live photos.
The Touch ID sensor is new.
It's faster, isn't it?
When they said it was faster, I didn't realize how fast. So, you know, before you would t- touch on the home button to wake the phone up, and then you just rest your finger there and it opens. That's how the old one worked. Now you touch the home button and it opens.
I like it. You don't have no resting.
There's no resting. There's no delay in between you touching the button and the phone.
It's not like it was slow before, but it's so you're saying it's appreciably faster.
Oh, well, it's so fast now. I actually had to change the way that I touched the phone to see the notifications.
Right.
Because before I would touch the home button, lift my thumb off, and the notifications would be there on the lock screen.
Right.
Well, now as soon as you touch it, it unlocks. So I have to use a different finger to touch the home button so that I can see the notifications.
Nice. And as I said earlier, I have absolutely come around on fingerprint. You have to have, not just for tap to pay, but just the convenience, the security, really. I mean,
people don't realize about the fingerprint is that your fingerprint is hashed in a completely separate part of the chip that nobody else can access.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's not sitting out there where somebody's going to steal your fingerprint. It's locked up tight.
There is one little thing that I guess is probably good to say, which is in the U.S. anyway, U.S. courts have held that a law enforcement can compel you to unlock a fingerprint locked phone, but they can't compel you to speak your password.
They can physically force you. They can force your finger on it. If you're asleep, your significant other can put your finger on it. So it's
held to be the same as taking your fingerprint. You cannot, if you've been arrested, not convicted, but just arrested, you cannot say, I'm not giving you my fingerprint. It's the same thing.
The battle between convenience and security.
Yeah. But on the other hand, for anybody but the government, and by the time you're in trouble with a government like that, I don't know if it matters, but anybody but the government, this is much more secure. I'll give you an example. We talked last week about LastPass. And I love LastPass. I use it all the time. And I usually turn on the remember password because I don't want to enter the password every time. And it's so convenient on an iPhone or an iPad with Touch ID because LastPass will accept the Touch ID. I'm sure Dashlane and 1Password will do the same. We'll accept the Touch ID as an identifier. Steve, we were talking about how it's a bad idea and a security issue to say to LastPass, remember my password. And I said, but Steve, if I use a fingerprint ID to unlock it, he said, that's fine. That's as secure, if not more secure, than the password. And so it's really, there is a significant security benefit to a good fingerprint reader.
Before that led to the success of fingerprint technology is that we would all use such stupid little passwords and, you know, people could guess them. They could watch you type them in. They could do all this. Or even worse, you wouldn't have a password at all. So, you know, our phones were completely unlocked and, you know, all the information was there. So at least what fingerprint did was allow us to lock up our devices and then not have to worry about this big, long password.
Well, and you don't, if your significant other says, hey, what's your password? I want to see what's on your phone. they have to get your finger. So give me your finger.
Just wait for them to fall asleep, Leo. Just wait for them to fall asleep.
So parents, this is something to keep in mind because a lot of parents, I know most parents with minor children will say, you know, it's fine for you to have a phone and you should have a password on it, but I must know your password. That's part of the deal. Now they're going to have to actually, and I don't think that's a bad thing. The kid will know, come here, Johnny, put your finger on that.
That's a lot of we've heard from parents who have their fingerprint established on the phone as well because they bought it. It's their house.
That's a way to do it, isn't it? Sure it is.
Also, businesses with either who use iPhones or iPads at the business, they don't want to give the password to someone who's going to leave the company. So they register and unregister the fingerprints. Oh, then they can use
so smart.
Yeah, it works really well.
What a good idea. 23 LTE bands. Let's get just a couple of little technical issues here. Are all the iPhones being sold in the United States the same phone?
You mean from a technical standpoint?
From the radio standpoint?
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if you bought it from Verizon, you'd be able to use it if you could unlock it. Actually, it's unlocked.
I believe, they're all using those same LTE bands.
It's all the same thing.
Isn't that correct,
Brenny? Yeah, there's only one model. So if you could go to apple.com/iPhone/LTE, there's one SKU for 6S and one SKU for 6 Plus.
Somebody's saying the AT&T one has another extra.
Oh, there is,
LTE
no, there is. Sorry, there is two SKUs.
There are two SKUs.
Yeah,
but that's only for that would be you would. But you know what? You don't It's not like it won't work on AT&T. You just won't get that extra band.
They have three. They have 23 bands across. And the thing is that radio is really, like, people call them a strange, like as much magic as science. And it really is, because all these things are not that compatible. You add one and it interferes with the other one. So there's several models, and each one of them has as many bands as they can manage to put together at any one time. And if you look at this list, they'll give you, if you go to apple.com/iPhone/LTE, they have all of this put down here, and it might be that some need this band and some need that band, and those bands are so close together that they have to physically separate them. But the list of bands that each model supports is getting incredibly long.
Yeah. And if I travel, this will presumably work almost anywhere I go, even China.
So it depends on what, and by work, I mean, I take a Rogers phone to AT&T in the U.S. and it works, but it drains the battery because they use towers and signals and everything a little bit differently. So there is a lot of cross-compatibility, but it'll always vary. And there's, I don't know, I'm not Sasha Sagan and not Brian Klug. I don't know enough about how China and other countries do their LTE, but there's several standards. But Apple is doing everything they can to make it as international as
single
possible.
Single SKU.
Well, and there's also big news for people who are on T-Mobile. Because the iPhone 6 lacked coverage for band 12. So if you are in a part of the country where really that's the only band, coverage band you can get, that's it for your iPhone. So the iPhone 6S's both support that. And so, again, it's limited to people who are on T-Mobile, but there are a lot of – I'm looking back at the support communities of people who are annoying.
No, 700 megahertz band is very important. And,
and there's one in Japan they added as well that a lot of people had wanted.
I have to say, in the United States anyway, an iPhone 6S Plus on T-Mobile is as close to phone nirvana as you can get, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think there's still one for Sprint, T-Mobile, and – so there's still a little bit of difference in CDMA models. Yeah,
that's too bad. Are they – so they're going to sell them in the stores Friday.
Yes.
If you didn't pre-order, or if you did pre-order and you're 3 to 5 weeks out, would it be a sensible thing to go to the store?
Go early.
Really? Yeah. You mean like 3 a.m. early?
Yeah. Or the night before early. Or now.
Or you know, if you want the one you want, like if you have your heart set on a very specific color, a very specific, like if you want exactly one model,
particularly if you want the rose gold, right?
Yeah, because you know those are all, either they don't make as many because they're not sure what demand will be yet, or they it's the one that's in the highest demand. If you don't care, and if you're happy with, usually if you're happy with space gray, then it's much easier than getting something like rose gold. So if you have your heart set on a rose gold, you know, 128 gigabyte with this, and that, just make sure you're there as early as possible.
But if not,
any size wandering when you want.
What was our experience like? I think, first of all, there are going to be more in stock than last year, right?
Yeah, they were increasing orders.
I think they said they were making a lot more.
They're trying. They always try to make sure that there's enough. And
well, yeah, you know, company wants to have a customer in the store that wants to lay down, plunk down some cash and not be able to sell it. So you clearly want, but you can't, demand is kind of impossible. Well,
the way the iPhone cycle works is it's like a big blockbuster movie release, and that everyone kind of knows when it's coming. It's one big launch day, and it's like trying to get in to see Avengers or something.
I had read the rumor that they had made 45 million this year. It seems like that would cover at least the first week. So my real question is, if you're flexible, like, well, I'd like rose gold 128, but I'd settle for titanium 64, could you go in later on Friday and say, you know, 3 in the afternoon instead and say, hey, what do you got? Will they have anything left?
Depends on the market, the area.
I mean,
it's also like sometimes carrier stores have them and Apple doesn't, or Best Buy is in remote areas.
That's why they're lines, because you could, I mean, in the past, that's been true. That you didn't have to get in line.
Wander down to the AT&T store to block away.
But there's no guarantee, right? That's the problem.
And also, they don't get as many. Sorry, Andy.
Right.
They don't get as many, but they don't get as many people. Like, who wants to line up at an AT&T store in a strip mall in Ojai? It's like, or wherever.
For the first iPhone, I lined up at an AT&T store. But that was the only way you could get it, right?
Neil Diamond got people lining up for him at the beginning, and now you can pretty much walk in and get the album. You know? I'm not saying that the iPhone is Neil Diamond. Okay, don't get me
wrong. Wow, Andy. Wow.
No. You see, I walked back on that immediately, without prompting either.
I would be as excited to see a Neil Diamond concert as I am to see an AC/DC concert.
Yeah. I said.
You are to know the sun, I'm there. I am the moon. You are the words. I am the song.
See, I'm a Neil Diamond fan.
I am too. I've seen Neil Diamond in concert.
I bet that all of us have had that phone call or that email from like you're an insider. Where is what Apple store should I go to for the secret shipments of iPhones? And I said, what carrier are you on? Verizon. Is there a Verizon store near where you are? Yeah, you should visit it. And then the next day, yeah, I was able to get the 64 gigabyte rose gold iPhone that I wanted just by walking in and asking. Okay,
what is it looked like from the early. Tallies up front, and this is all from the Apple website, that the rose gold was going to be the one everybody wanted, and it looked like the big one was probably going to be harder to get than the 6S, right?
Yeah, the mainstream is moving slow. I mean, it's taken a while, but with the Note 5 and the iPhone 6 Plus, I think more and more people have stopped thinking that those phones are ludicrous and started realizing that It really is the most important device you have with you. And for some people, they need that bigger screen, either because of accessibility or just because they want to get a lot of things done. And it doesn't look goofy anymore. We're used to it now.
This is going to be my little plastic pal for the next year or so.
Plastic. Oh, whoa, what are we talking about?
I'm sorry, my 7,000 alloy aluminum.
Aluminium, Leo. Aluminium.
What was it? Was it Nilay Patel who said, let's face it, this thing looks like crap, you're going to want to put it in a case? That kind of stunned me.
I'm waiting for Jean-Louis Gasset to take another photo of his armband.
Did anybody, what were the nitpicks? Did anybody not like the iPhone? I read almost universally.
The 6 still doesn't have OIS, which some people really want, the optical image stabilization.
But you know what? Get the big one.
Yeah.
That's why I got the one. That was one of, I'll tell you why I wanted the big one. And it's not for real estate. I like big phones, but I wanted OIS and I wanted better battery life.
See, for me, it was mostly because of my eyes. You know, I get older and I can't see as well. And I honestly, that bigger screen means that I don't have to reach for my glasses all the time. If I'm just, you know, quickly reading an email, I can do that easily on the 6 Plus, the 6S Plus. But, you know, if I want to go in and start replying and doing some stuff, then I can reach over and grab my glasses. So whatever I can do to limit the amount that I need to reach for something else just to do a simple task on my phone, I'll do it. And that means getting a larger screen.
I have to say that I might, for the first time, disagree with those who said, oh, if you have a 6, you don't need a 6S. Yeah. This is a pretty big upgrade.
It's a huge upgrade.
Yeah.
And that's what I don't understand about some of the reviews that say, you know, this is, it's not that significant.
It's
or
minor, it's iterative.
Minor. It's a normal 6 or a normal S release. It's not. If you look back into what's been done, typically Apple will update components, LTE, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and, you know, make iterative changes in the S release to definitely make that a better device. But these changes are significant. I mean, you would expect to see changes like this, you know, in a whole new a numbered release. So they did a lot of work with this one.
And the times have changed a little bit. People still, I know many of you are still stuck with 2-year cycles and early termination fees. But that's shifting, especially with the monthly plans that all the carriers and Apple now are offering.
I would say that almost on a spiritual level, if your 1-year-old phone that you've paid $1,000 for is still working great, maybe it's okay to wait a year and not have the latest thing.
I agree.
It's good because you realize that for me, the star feature is 3D touch.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a while for all the apps to really catch up with it. So it's not like it's going to be a critical feature outside of the Apple apps for the next couple of months. And it's not like you can't do without it. Again, if it's your money, spend it however you'd like. But I think that a lot of people seem to be on sort of the automatic plan that if a new phone is available to me, either because I'm off contract or because there's been a new release, then I must have that new phone. And I don't want to be responsible for people just saying, well, if I can buy the new phone, I should have it.
Well, who let Andy on the show anyway?
He's spiritual. No, he's a spiritual leader. He's a guru.
I actually agree with Andy that, there are people that will say that you have to upgrade because of this feature or that feature. It is going to take developers a little bit to come out and upgrade their apps. And, you know, once you start using something like that, like 3D Touch, you'll want it in every app. I know this because I've been trying, other apps. So, if you're locked into something, it's difficult to justify spending money and then losing money on a 1-year purchase, which is what I think Andy's getting at. That's a difficult thing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you.
Nope.
I just think about my own experiences, like the best thing, consumer thing I've bought in the past 5 years has been the my Olympus OMD EM1. And it's because for the 3 years straight, I was dissatisfied with the SLR that I had. And I had the money put away. It was like almost practically in an envelope taped to the bottom of my desk. The money was already budgeted and there. And I came so close to buying a new camera 2 years in a row because I just didn't like the old one, even though I didn't see a new one that really got me excited. And then when I absolutely fell in love with this camera, I had waited 3 years. The technology was 3 years more, but I also had that sort of emotional and also the rational connection to it. Just like to make myself look pathetic, I keep mentioning that I was one of the people who bought like the third generation iPad, the Retina that has practically no memory and can't really play games.
Just because you wanted Touch ID.
Well, because I bought the first generation one, it was 2 years later, and I wanted Retina, and I didn't think that Apple would release two 9.7 inch iPads in the same year. and so for the past 2 or 3 years, I've been thinking, man, I use my iPad so much, I use it as a laptop, I should replace it with a new one. And I saw the iPad Air, great, that's really great. Okay, I mean, it's nice, but it's not. Oh, great, the iPad Air 2, it's even faster and it has touch. Okay, I mean, I could, but and now that I waited 2 years, I am in love with the concept of the iPad Pro, a device that I still have not even touched, and I can't spend that money fast enough. And it's not. I keep asking myself, and this is the advice I like to try to give people: try to know what problem will this new thing solve, or what opportunity will it create. And because I've waited a couple of years to get the iPad Pro, it is solving a long list of problems and creating a great list of opportunities that neither of the previous iPads could do. So that's why I say, if you don't have a compelling reason, if a piece of technology does not get the hairs of the back of your neck standing up, and Apple can make technology exactly like that, don't not get it, but at least realize that not getting it is a possibility.
You guys all think you're talking to normal people, but anybody who listens to this show is...
They've already bought it.
Exactly.
They're ordering because we're talking about the iPhone
6S. This is not a show for people who are sensible in their spending and think about it. And
we're not your enablers. thank you for buying our sponsor's merchandise, but we're not going to enable you.
This is a show for people who want everything new and exciting. And
now.
And, you know... and if we're not pushing you into it. If you don't want to spend the money, of course not.
But you're our people. Do it. Go ahead. Enjoy.
Let's take a break.
You deserve it.
There's so much to talk about today. I don't know how we're going to get it all in. I'm so glad that you're here, Jim Dalrymple, because you actually, were one of the handful of people who got to have had for 2 weeks these new iPhones and give us a real world review of it. So I appreciate your being here.
Leo, I can't wait to meet you and Lisa.
We're going to have fun.
On Friday night.
Friday night.
We are going to have a blast.
Bong. Bong.
The construction workers seem to be gone. So.
It's lunchtime in New England.
Now they're too drunk to operate heavy machinery.
They took Ambien and they're reading
their
the
Adderall,
label.
Their Adderall dealer came in.
Or Jim took care of them during one of the...
Let's take a break and talk about fiber optic cables. You know the name Corning, of course. Corning's glass is what makes your smartphone smarter. It makes it more stable. But Corning is also very well known in the data industry for fiber optic cables. They are really doing amazing stuff with the new generation of cables. Now, they're making cables available, Thunderbolt and USB 3 cables, that will blow your mind. We're talking data rates for Thunderbolt of 20 gigabits per second, USB 3, 5 gigabits per second. No other cable comes even close. These are not copper. These are optical. And what's interesting about them is they put in the ends of the cables converters because, of course, it is copper that's going in. But they, the cable themselves have a circuitry that convert the incoming signal, the bits coming in through the copper, into light, laser light. And that's then they use the fiber optic cable. They're thin. They're flexible and they go a lot farther. But something a lot of people, in fact, when we first put in fiber optics for our storage area network here in the studio, the engineer said, don't step on it. Don't bend it. Don't do, you know, but I got to show you these new cables. Corning, once again, is doing amazing stuff with glass. This is a laser. Fires a little blinking red light. I'm going to put the fiber optic cable end into that. And you can see that it is transmitting down the cable. But watch this. In the past, you could not do this. This would. I'm going to tie it in a bow. Watch this. Now, this one, I don't know. Every time I do this, I go, what? I'm going to crimp this cable, crimp it enough to jam them into these little holes here. This new cable technology exclusively from Corning means that fiber optic cables are much more robust than ever before. This is not something you would ever do with the cables we have downstairs from a few years ago. But now these cables are robust enough to be used in your home, to be used in tough applications. And let's see, is it still blinking? Yeah, that's kind of amazing. The light is still, despite the crimping, the bow, this is great stuff. They figured out how to make their USB and Thunderbolt cables super strong, super flexible, and transmitting at top speed. Corning optical cables, 60 meters, that's 200 feet for Thunderbolt. Don't try that with a copper cable. 50 meters, 165 feet for USB 3. Declutter, move peripherals into another room, improve productivity, increase security. Somebody called us on Saturday on the new screensaver, said I have a fire safe and I want to put my network attached storage in there. It has a little cable run. And I said, well, you know, you should get these. You got to get these cables. They're 80% lighter than copper cables. They're so thin, so flexible, 50% thinner. Now, they're a little more expensive, but you're getting the best. Take advantage of a special deal. Get $30 off the 30-meter. What? $30 and $50 off the 50-meter USB 3 cables. And there's no limit. You could buy as many as you want. So stock up. I bought a ton of them for the house. Corning.com/twit. Corning.com/twit. Do use the offer code TWIT at checkout. They are amazing, these cables. We're upgrading the whole, all the infrastructure. So reliable. And it takes a bending and it keeps on sending. I'm going to coin that new phrase. Look at that. Can you see it's still blinking? Now I have to untie this mess I've made. Corning.com/twit. Use the promo code TWIT. Renee Ritchie here from iMore.com. Andy Anacco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Jim Dalrymple from his backyard, where it's nice and quiet.
How about that?
Lunchtime! It's, I think they just took a little time off. That's good. So let's talk about Marco Arment. I'm sure you're all friends of Marco's. He created one of several very popular ad blockers. And, of course, as soon as iOS 9 came out, these ad blockers jumped to the top of the charts, showing that people not only knew about this capability, but we're quick to jump in. His ad blocker piece was, what, 99 cents?
$2.99,
yeah.
I think the other ones are similarly priced, right? Crystal was 99, I think.
Yeah, they varied.
I bought it.
Well, everybody loves Marco. Marco's a great developer. He did Instapaper. He did Overcast.
He was a very considerate developer. He thinks deeply about this kind of stuff.
Yes, and you know his UI is going to be great. Now, this was actually, piece was based on something he just cobbled together for himself. He uses the Ghostery database. Ghostery is a really excellent plugin for Chrome that we've recommended before. I presume they have Firefox and other, but it's for the desktop. And the Ghostery database, as you know, all these blockers were kind of the same way. They create blacklists. sites or URLs or IP addresses that are just blocked. And that's how they block ads. You can't get the ad from the ad server. You don't see it. Unfortunately, his ad blocker used the Ghostery database, which blocked, among other things, ads from the deck.
It was indiscriminate.
Well, it's not indiscriminate. It's all ad servers.
Yep.
That's an ad blocker. But there's a little hitch in the get along there because Marco.org uses ads from the deck, as does Daring Fireball.
And The Loop.
And The Loop. And I have to point out, they are as unobtrusive as an ad can be. I don't think anybody would ever complain about the ads from the deck. You're not seeing them right now because I've got an ad blocker on. So,
Wow.
Let me just send an envelope and mail it.
Need some help getting that knife out of your back? I'll come over.
Let me just turn. Actually, I had it turned off. Okay, so that's good. They are showing. And I mean, look, there's the ad. Field Notes brand limited edition for fall from Shenandoah ads via the deck. That is not a jumping punch the monkey annoying ad. It's not going to give you malware because there's no flash. It's a very simple graphic. That is as good as an ad can be on the internet.
And there is no tracking.
Ah, there's not even any tracking.
No tracking.
Nevertheless, Ghostery blocks it. And Marco felt, well, it's kind of a conflict of interest if I took that one thing out of the Ghostery database. So he decided, I think ethically and probably rightly, to leave it in. And then after 3 days, he wrote a blog post at Marco.org saying, I'm winning a war I don't want to fight. He was the number one ad blocker, and he pulled it. The number one app of all time, of all on iTunes, the iTunes store, and he pulled it. Knowing that no matter what he did at that point, he's going to get heat. Either Gruber and Dalrymple are going to come over and break his knees. Or did you notice, by the way, have you noticed a drop in revenue or a drop in hits from these ad blockers?
I haven't really noticed a big difference. I don't know. I don't have anything really to do with the ads.
You're not
because it's
it.
Just yeah. I don't monitor the ads. That's not how the deck works. And thankfully, you know, with the deck, they don't care about who you are. They don't care about tracking you. They just want to put a small ad up there. And the site is designed in the same way. I mean, you know, Jim Koodle, who runs the deck, is very particular about the sites that he has the deck on. And, you know, I think we're particular about the ads that go up there. So it's a good partnership. And, you know, I hope people see that and in some way or another will whitelist the deck.
Right.
So that those do show up.
Well, and I feel like, by the way, Peace did not have any capability to do that. I feel like you can
whitelist on Peace.
Oh, you could. Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like you need to, if you're going to be using an ad blocker, and I completely understand why people do, you know, there's good reason for using an ad blocker, not just privacy concerns with tracking, but the malware that's sometimes introduced by some ads with flash in them, not something anybody on the Mac or iOS has to worry about, but still. And these ads are annoying in many cases, not like the deck. If you were going to do that, you also need to send a signal that there are ads that you don't want to block. What you want to do is tell the advertising industry, do this, not that.
And Marco, you could block by site, but you couldn't. So you could whitelist by site, but not by ad provider.
Okay. So you could say not the deck's okay, but you could at least say,
Loop and Marco. And, okay. Yeah, but that's a lot of, like, you have to start going to every site.
People aren't going to do that. Right. Let's face it, people are not going to do that. But I don't think it was, I have to say, I don't think that was the reason Marco pulled it. But you guys, I don't know, have you talked to him since he pulled it? I think he's kind of gone underground.
He said
what he intended to say publicly in his own words. So it's not for me to speculate.
Yeah. Just doesn't feel good. I've pulled Peace from the App Store.
But the reaction on Twitter was horrible at times.
The way people treated him was horrible. I'm very, very sorry for the reaction that he's been getting.
I think that a lot of people have been speculating about his motives, either accusing him of things that are contrary to the facts or things that should not be stated as a matter of guesswork. And it's just uncouth, unsocial, and frankly, just mean-spirited. I think we can have a debate over the ethics of ad blocking in general. That's a fine topic. But I have to say that I am very, very proud of him for deciding that I personally have an ethical issue with this, and I'm going to do something that, being a creature of thought that lives on the internet, I know that this is going to bring me a lot of heat, but nonetheless, I feel as though this is the right thing to do. I think so few times do we have these conversations. Again, the second time, maybe it's the fact that the Pope is in the country. Well, the second time I'll mention the spirit. We are required to do the work that we must do according to what we define as right and wrong. And we do not have the ability to simply say that this is profitable for me or this is popular for me. It is contrary to my beliefs as a human being on this planet, but I'm going to do it anyway. It's nothing but a positive thing for Marco that he has said, I don't believe this is correct for myself. I feel bad doing this. And so therefore, I'm going to pull this.
He also, in his blog post, said, I suggest you use Ghostery on the desktop. And he linked to Purify and Crystal to iOS solutions on your iPhone and your iPad. So he's not saying don't use an ad blocker. He's just saying I don't want to be the guy who's doing it.
It's the personal pronoun is the most important thing of the stuff that he's been saying. He's saying this is what I'm the person who has to shave my face every day in the mirror. I'm the guy who gets to look at myself. And if you have to be happy with the decisions that person has made.
And he did say, I know this is going to be immensely unpopular and subject me to a torrent of unpleasantness. He said, you know, you can get a refund. Initially, he had his own mechanism. But oddly enough, Apple, which I think I agree with him. I've never heard of this happening before. Apple notified him that they're going to proactively refund all purchases of Peace just automatically through the store.
Yeah, I saw some people saying it had happened once or twice with other apps, but okay. It's incredibly uncommon.
Fair. And he didn't ask them. He knew it wouldn't. He said, I asked some Apple friends if this was even possible, and we all thought the same thing. iTunes billing works the way it works, period, and no special cases can be made. Developers have no ability to issue refunds, so he had to go through a clunky process, so forth. He says the regular system has refunded 13,000 people. Up as of his blog post, which was a couple of days ago. So I think it's interesting. Apple's obviously paying attention and decided that the refund should be made. Nevertheless, they are enabling ad blockers on iOS. Okay, you can defend Apple if you want on this. I'll just throw this out there. It looks to the outside world and to me that Apple, in supporting ad blocking on Safari, is kind of pushing people to use it in apps which have iAds on them or some other ad network on them, and Apple will get a cut of. The ad blocking does not block ads in apps, and Apple sells ads in apps. And in fact, I've already seen, I think, in my opinion, a smoking gun. Wired had a front page article a couple of days ago that said, you can't read this on the web until Tuesday, but if you'd like to read it now, use the news app on iOS. And I don't know if Apple talked them into that or what the deal was, but to me, that is the consequence of this. And it doesn't make Apple look good. It makes Apple look greedy.
I think the only danger, though, is saying that is talking about Apple as one entity. Like, my understanding is that there are people on the Safari team who have historically not liked tracking, and they've tried to do everything they can over the course of many generations to minimize the ability to track you on the web, from Do Not Follow to the Mac address. There's just a history of technologies, and this was someone's idea. And Apple marketing does push down ideas, but at Apple, engineers can submit ideas too, and they can get approved. And this was one of the ideas that got submitted. And there's also people in the news team who want to do the best they can for news products. So they're busy making deals to feature content. And Apple has done things like remove the UDID ability to track between applications and iAd, even in ads. I mean, even inside apps, I think AdMob and others are still way bigger providers than them. So to me, this this smelt initially, like, I know ad blockers was the big talk, but this was a content blocker. They were very clear it's a content blocker. And you don't have to block ads. You can block just tracking scripts. You can block web fonts. You can block images and movies. And I think the Safari team, and I don't want to speak for them, but I get the sense that the Safari team got tired of people complaining about the performance. This is a team that was built from the start to consider performance to be sacrosanct. Like, they had zero regression as their policy. They take enormous pride in rendering the web as fast as possible. And because of things out of their control, they were getting a bad reputation. Prominent, I'm not going to mention any names, but prominent websites were publishing articles saying mobile Safari sucks. And when you remove the... Yeah, and when you remove the ads, Mobile Safari flies. Like, yeah. It flies. It is so fast. And I think that at the end of the day, yes, this technology can be used for blocking ads, and that's the obvious way to use it. And anybody and everybody knows that. But at the end of the day, it is now indisputable where the source of mobile congestion is on the web. And this sort of forces everybody to improve their game. And if there are ways of making this better, this sort of enables that technology. It's like they stopped Flash inside Safari, and they stopped UDID trackers. And it is within the history of Apple's development process this sort of thing comes out.
But I'm sure, as Jim will say, and Gruber will say, and Marco will say, there are good ads. And the problem with ad blockers is just they block indiscriminately.
Well, they don't block native ads or Gruber's RSS ads or things like that.
We can actually have Jim see what he would say.
Yeah. Well, I'm asking. Jim?
Sorry.
Well, no, I think that they're... The problem that we're trying to deal with here is not dealing with ads, but dealing with garbage, dealing with bad ads. And we've been dealing with bad ads for so long, and so many sites have them, that, you know, when somebody says, well, here's a content blocker that you can use to disable this stuff and make the web blazingly fast as it should be, then, of course, we're going to jump all over it. That only makes sense, and I understand that. But there are some people and some sites, you know, and I mentioned Jim Koodle from the deck. That's one company that is trying to get away from the bad ads. And then you have some sites like Gruber and Marco and Jason Snell and me that use the deck. We don't care about tracking. Jim doesn't care about tracking. You know, I would like to see... those ones exempt from that. But, you know, Leo, you said it earlier, people are not going to go through and start whitelisting all of those sites. It's just not going to happen. So we all get punished because of sites that, you know, just crush the web with all of the stuff that they have. So, you know, it is unfortunate. But that's where we are.
You're also going to see sites. I mean, look, we've been there before, as you say. Pop-ups were a horrific problem on the web. They were almost all ads. Every browser implemented pop-up blockers. It was just, and there wasn't even any discussion about it. They just said,
oh, Leo, no. I heard the best story. Don Melton, we recorded his show a couple of days ago, and I'll have it up soon, but he told the story of how they got pop-up blockers into Safari. And it wasn't what I expected at all. It was Steve Jobs giving a preview to Walt Mossberg, who said, can't you do anything about these pop-ups? And he's like, hold on a second, Don, do you know anything about these pop-ups? And Don's like, boss, we got a ship. Don, can you do anything about these pop-ups? All right, boss.
Nice. Thank you, Walt Mossberg.
Yep.
I noticed that Jason, I just turned on the blocker on Six Colors, that Jason is doing, this is a first party ad and will never get blocked by an ad blocker. But that's because probably he sold that directly to pCalc.
Correct.
And what pCalc is not going to get is impressions. Now, pCalc probably doesn't care. That's a relationship between Jim and Jason and the developer. But most people can't do that. Most people use ad networks, and ad networks are never going to be first party. And those advertisers want, at least, that's how they get billed. They want impressions at least.
And some people are talking about using CNAMEs to make them appear like first parties. And some people are putting JavaScript buttons to let you see the rest of the article. And they've been doing it just to be clear, this isn't new. There's been people who've been trying to fight content blockers or ad blockers on PCs for years. So they've got all these technologies. They'll do things like make a JavaScript button that says read more. And if you're blocking JavaScript, you can't physically hit that button. So you have to turn off your content blocker and load all that stuff up just to be able to read the rest of the article. And some people are putting up intercepts saying, please take off your content blocker. We talked about last time someone's trying to make Comic Sans automatic if you're blocking content.
I wish they'd done that. Here I am on FARC.com. We interviewed Drew Curtis, the founder of FARC, who is running for Kentucky governor. We interviewed him yesterday on Triangulation. And because I have an ad blocker, I get a pop, a little bar at the top that says, FARC feeds our squirrel with revenue from ads. Could you consider signing up for Total FARC? They offer a paid ad-free experience. And you see this if you're running an ad blocker. CNET, you showed Jim how CNET handles it with videos, right?
Yeah. Dave Mark posted that the other day where they were saying they popped up a thing in the video and said, we noticed that you have an ad blocker on. If you want to watch this video, turn off the ad blocker and reload the page.
Right.
Yeah. That's why. I'm sorry.
When we posted that, feedback from people on Twitter was, I'll just go somewhere else.
Right.
You know, it wasn't, oh, okay, I'll turn off the ad blocker. But a lot of that, I think, has to do with the site itself. I mean, CNET used to be the big news site. I think a lot of people have fallen out of love with CNET. They don't necessarily trust them anymore. I'm not sure what the issue is, but they've moved on. I would suspect if people asked John Gruber, or if John asked people to turn off
much more likely to
blocking,
do it. Yeah.
They're much more likely to do that. They see CNET as a big corporation, whereas they see, you know, John and myself, I mean, we're individuals. We're trying to make a go of it on our own, and this is one way that we try and do this.
But it also comes down to the respect issue. If you respect your users and ask for respect in return, you're much more likely to get it, right?
I agree.
You know, we should hope for an ideal version of the universe. Sometimes that pays off, sometimes that doesn't. I feel as though this is just a simple case of, I think everybody should have the right to control what happens on their own computers, especially where the web is concerned. I feel as though the web was designed as a medium where when you publish on that medium, you have no right to expect or control how that content is going to appear on that person's browser, because they might have a very slow connection, so they've turned off images, or they might have low vision problems, so they're going to take the really nice font that you pre-selected in font size and turn it to a huge Arial or Helvetica. They might have a plugin that turns all reference to Kardashian into Marie Curie. You don't have the right. You don't have the reasonable expectation that what you send is going to be what the person sees on their browser. Could be on a phone. It could be on a big screen. Could be on a watch. Could be on whatever. And that's why, by the same coin, the people who host who create these websites, who publish this stuff, have the right to say, I'm going to control the server by saying, if you're not allowing JavaScript to run, if you're not allowing me to serve ads, you don't get my content. And that's perfectly okay for them to do. Again, we all have to make our decisions on what's best for our businesses and what's best for us ethically. And I think that this is something that sometimes the war goes on for so long that all of the features of the terrain have been leveled and turned into flat mud. And that's the basis upon which we build something new and better and stronger.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, there's lots more to talk about. iOS 9, we could talk about watchOS 2.0. It finally came out yesterday. I'd love to know what you guys think of it. We've seen the first unboxing of a fourth generation Apple TV. Did you get one of those too, Jim?
I did not. I don't know how they get that.
I think people are unboxing the developer versions, which I mean, I understand why they want to do it, but Apple is not the kind of company that easily gives out developer versions.
Yeah, you can't
and
get another
if people
one.
Abuse it, no, but if people abuse it, they might stop doing it next time. And it's a huge advantage for developers to have early access to hardware. And I'm sure those boxes, like maybe someone got a review unit I don't know about, but if the box came as a developer unit with a developer NDA and all those things, and you're unboxing it, it feels like you're screwing people. Over.
Yep. Don't do it. Don't break the embargo. Don't break the NDA.
If you got it legitimately, I mean, more power to you. But if you didn't, then you're hurting
Seems
people.
Unlikely.
Do we? If you promise something, you keep the promise. Period.
When is this coming out?
October.
So it could be soon. It's not far off. It comes with
maybe
two
your
white
developer
Apple
friend
stickers.
Gave it to you or something. But it's still. Oh, I mean, yeah, like that's
it's not,
yeah, it's not
good. It's 9 to 5 Mac. If you want to.
I'm
it's not just
forward
there's a lot of people.
Myself.
There was an unboxing the next day.
Yeah. It must be the developer edition.
We learned so much from unboxings too.
Well, I know how big it's going to be.
But again, I don't want to cast aspersions. They might have everyone who's unboxed it might have got legitimate versions. But if they didn't, I just urge them to think of next year's
think of the children product. Our show today brought to you by 99 Designs. If you're starting a company, you've got a company, you need a logo, you need branding. Think of the children. Think of the designers. You've got to don't Comic Sans. No, look at Rene Ritchie. This man is a designer. He knows what he's doing. You and I, not so much. You need to work with the best. And 99 Designs puts hundreds of thousands of great designers at your fingertips. Designers from all over the world. What you do is you go to 99designs.com and you say, you give them some information. You create what they call a contest. I don't know if that's the best word for it. It's a request for submissions. You'll get lots of design ideas. You pick the one you want and you work with the designer to improve it, and you've got a logo. So important to get a logo that really works. It's just as important as buying the chairs and signing the lease. And it's affordable. Logo design started at $299. Now, you start with the logo, but 99 Designs will also do the visual identity, the business cards, the website. They can help you with your domain. They can do everything from car wraps to menus. In fact, we use 99 Designs for our T-shirt designs. We got our media kit that we sent out to potential advertisers was looking a little bit long in the tooth. We went to 99 Designs. We got a gorgeous media kit. Affordable, great designs, dozens of options, and it's backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. So you get the design you love or your money back. 99 Designs, they make it easy to get your business off the ground with high-quality, affordable designs. Branding is everything. Do it right. Don't do it yourself. Visit 99designs.com/twit to get started today. You'll see it's very easy to do it, and the results will amaze you. And we've got a free $99 upgrade for fans of Twit. 99 Designs will highlight your project listing. They'll bump it to the top. They'll feature it on their blog. And you're going to get, on average, about twice as many designs to choose from. And that's free when you start your project at 99designs.com/twit. That's where you don't go anywhere else on the site, because you'll have to pay the $99. Get it free at 99designs.com/TWIT. We thank them so much for their support of Mac Break Weekly. The iPhone 6S and 6S Plus is in fact, many of us have already gotten our shipping notice. It's on the fast boat from China. What do they do? They must get giant 747 cargo planes, and right? And fill them.
Teleporters.
That's what I would do.
That's what I would do. Actually, that's what Elon Musk, we were talking to Jason Calacanis, who's an investor in one of the companies that wants to do Hyperloop. He said, forget Hyperloop for passengers. That's not the real benefit. You get a Hyperloop between here and Asia. Because there's no humans, so, you know, the risks are minimized. And that way you can get almost instantly all the stuff that they're making in China here. Bet you Apple like that.
They're putting Hyperloops everywhere, and all of a sudden we're Krypton just disintegrating.
Yeah, right. All right, this is an article. I got to get your take on this one. A Wall Street Journal had this article, I think it was yesterday, by Daisuke Wakabayashi, who's been doing, by the way, really rocking the Apple coverage on the Wall Street Journal. He or she?
He.
He.
He, yeah.
He says it is a committed project to build and sell an electric car with a target date of 2019.
Yep.
According to people familiar with the matter. In other words, a leak from Apple. Is that possible?
I think if you talk, you know, to Jim Ryan or anybody, you get the sense with the car where we were with the Apple TV or even the Apple Watch a couple of years ago, where enough people that you know that are incredibly in the community that are incredibly good are working on a special project somewhere, that there has to be a lot of fire to it. There's just no way that this wasn't going to be a thing, given how much Apple has been putting into
it. Yeah, well, we know they've hired a lot of people in that area. Project codenamed Titan. According to the article, they've been given permission to take the existing 600-person team and triple it. That's a company.
Wonder they're building near Jim.
How many people? Yeah. How many people work at Tesla? I mean, 1,800 people, that's a business. Apparently will not be fully autonomous. I think 2019 would be a very ambitious date to put out a fully autonomous vehicle.
Even just regulatory, that'd be ambitious.
That's not going to happen. But we'll have some autonomy in it, and will be, and it apparently is the long-term goal.
And it's something you have to move people towards. Like, I remember we were at CES a couple of years ago, Leo. Both of us were at Ford, and they were telling us why it just scares people out of their minds if you do too many things too quickly.
Yeah.
You've got to sort of ease them towards the future.
Even getting in the auto industry in 3 years is ambitious. But I'd certainly look at an Apple car. who wouldn't, right?
Yeah, I would.
You know it'd have a good user interface.
Yeah.
That's a big jump, though, to go from making computers and digital electronic devices, consumer electronic devices, to making an automobile.
They're making a computer that drives, Leo.
But that's also interesting when you think about, imagine Apple only making 10,000 copies of something. Imagine if they know that they're not trying to please 15 million people per quarter, but 10,000 people, maybe even total for this entire model. I think I actually filed a piece for cars.com that might even be online right now about this. And it might be interesting to think about Apple not even necessarily making an entire and selling an entire car, but sort of making the parts that other and technologies that other companies use to make their own cars. Benedict Evans had a nice piece on his blog about a month ago talking about how you can build electric cars unlike gas cars the same way you build a phone, where let's say that you want to have a company that makes the most secure phone in the world. You don't have to now build a phone from the ground up. You can have HTC build you your handset. HTC is building the handset using chips from Qualcomm, and you can get the operating system from Google, and then put whatever secret sauce you want to put into it that makes all these things into your own super duper black phone. Apple, this is even guesswork. This is just discussion of how different electric cars are. Apple could simply say, we're going to build this wonderful chassis, this wonderful rolling stock that runs this really great piece of software. And then other companies are going to be able to build their own coachworks on top of it and build their own interiors. But it will be an Apple-made car, or we will make the software that all this stuff runs. There's so many possibilities available to Apple for this. And given given that there's still so much money coming in from the iPhone that's causing a fire hazard inside offices with all the bales of $100 bills, they have the amount of time to really explore how would they most like to solve the problem represented by cars today.
Well, and I think that's something that's important to look at when we're considering what will Apple do next. Apple likes to solve a problem, and I think I'm being strafed now.
That sounds like the old 1914 Fokker.
I might have to run to the anti-aircraft gun here.
It's Samsung, Jim. It's Samsung. They found you.
I think we have to consider, is there an industry where Apple could make a difference and solve problems? And that's what they've tried to do. If you look at the iPod, the iPhone, the iPad, the watch, that's what they're trying to do with all of these, is solve problems for people. So could they solve problems with cars? Further to Andy's point, yeah, I mean, they could come out and build their own car, but maybe they could just build the software and some, a whole component software engine that would run everything. And it would be efficient, and things would get updated, on Apple's schedule, not on a dealer's schedule. This is the possibilities, like Andy said, are endless. And I think that is a good possibility.
The last, of course, Tesla is the last car company in America to start up. The last car company before Tesla was Ford 114 years ago. Tesla's market cap, though, is only $33.89 billion.
Yeah, Google's going to get into this, too.
Yeah, but Tesla started or was founded in 2003 and didn't ship a car for 7 years, something like that. It took them a while.
And also look at how they did that. They started off by selling a super expensive sports car.
Yeah.
For people who not only early believers in the technology, but also what can we do that's special today? And what you can do is you can blow the butts off of every other car at that stoplight with acceleration. And then they came out with a more conventional luxury car that's fitted out like a very comfortable place to sit and drive for a couple of hours. And now they're moving more towards now we've got enough capital that we can start building cars that might cost $40,000 to $45,000. They're finally in the range where if you're shopping for a car, you can talk yourself into saying, with all the tax credits and all the money you'll save on maintenance and fuel, that might actually be a more likely thing for me to buy than a $30,000 car. So Apple can do the exact same thing. They can simply say, we're going to build 5,000 copies of this $100,000 car, and then sort of work down from there. Again, assuming that they're trying to build a whole car. Google has actually said that. I'm sorry. I'd have to come up with the exact quote, but I believe that Google has indicated that they're not really interested in building cars. They want to build the software so that other people can build cars.
Yeah.
But if you look at some of the other things that has happened, and I've read this thing from Mercedes, where Mercedes has spent the last decade working on autonomous cars and electric cars and things like that. So when it comes down to a buying choice, do you look at Google or do you look at Mercedes? I'm looking at Mercedes, to be honest, yeah. Because, you know, they have a great safety record and they're good quality cars and all that. So when I saw there's a video out there of you know, it's a Mercedes video, but still, of the stuff that they've been doing, it looks pretty remarkable. And if you look that they've been working on this for a decade and so has Google, I'm still leaning towards Mercedes.
Especially when you're plunking down tens of thousands of dollars on a consumer item. I mean, right. I was literally like in the 10 minutes before the show started editing down 1,000 words into 500 words. So I'm sorry if I'm quoting myself incessantly about this, but it's possible that the end game is to just like a luxury car or a sports car manufacturer is very, very proud about how we're using the Ford M41 engine, the most high performance street car engine that's available. We're using this suspension from this manufacturer. It would even be a boon for Apple if people were Mercedes and BMW and all these high end makers were able to say very, very proudly that we're running Apple Car OS as our intelligent control system for the motor that we're using and for the suspension that we're using.
Tesla took 5 years. They took a Lotus body and electrified it. So they were building on an existing platform.
People are attracted to. Okay, granted, Lotus also, I think, didn't Lotus also design the DeLorean? But it's like you have these coach makers, these companies that are really good at designing cars that have that emotional appeal to certain buyers. You let them do what they do best. People love Apple for the connection that they can create between technology and human beings. So that becomes so subtle that you forget that you're interacting with a really complex piece of technology. And you look at the software that runs electric cars or even regular street cars these days. It is an integration problem the likes of which have not been seen since the space shuttle program. And for Apple to make all that completely invisible and transparent to the user and make, this is the word that keeps coming up when we talk about Apple products, make it delightful, that's a pretty big opportunity.
But Apple, to its advantage, is coming at the end of a lot of development in this area, in batteries. Apple's learned a lot about manufacturing. They can stand on the shoulders of Tesla and others. I mean, it's not like they have to start from scratch. They've been hiring people away from Tesla and others, and they know a lot about manufacture. So,
That's the most significant thing about these. There are rumors, and Rene mentioned the Apple TV. I mean, I think he was talking about the standalone Apple TV. That was rumor, the white hot rumor for an entire year. You might have talked to people who claim to have actually seen an engineering sample of an Apple TV that was ready to go, and yet it didn't show up because Apple is capable of certainly changing their minds or deciding we had to build it to find out why we can't really sell this as a product. But the most interesting thing to me then about all these car rumors are the number of people they're convincing to leave brilliant careers with established companies to start working on a product that Apple has absolutely no public commitment to at this time. That's significant. The meetings that they might have had, they must have had do you want to keep selling sugar water to kids or do you want to help me change the world speech?
Keep like burning petrol 10? Or
– exactly.
Yeah.
You want to keep killing the planet killer, or do you want to help save the planet?
I actually meant the Apple TV box this time, because we talked for years about where is it? Why isn't it updating? Right. Where is it? But at the same time, you'd go to WWDC and you'd see all these brilliant engineers who are working on it. So you knew that there had to be something there. And it's the same thing exactly what Andy mentioned with the car. There's enough brilliant people being involved. I mean, Apple's poaching broad and wide and deep that these people are, I don't think they're going there to twiddle their thumbs. So you've got to think something pretty cool is happening.
It's very exciting, because here's a company that's done very, very well, has a, you know, one of the most popular products in the world, has a ton of cash in the bank, and instead of doing something incremental, has decided to enter a completely new, historically very challenging market at a time when that market is being completely disrupted and will be even more disrupted by a couple of things: environmental concerns, the cost of gasoline, and the move to autonomous vehicles. They probably see this as an inflection point in automotive history, and this would be a good time to enter the fray.
Yeah, this could be a robber baron moment. You look at the robber barons of the last 100 years, where they realize that every major city that wants to be an international city is investing in subway systems and transportation and highways and better roads and better transport in and out. And that's where all of these people just jumped in with their complete lack of morals to try to clean up as many places as possible. And if you think about a future 20 years from now, maybe not even 10 years from now, in which private car ownership is a somewhat unusual thing, because why would you want to own a car when you can press a button on a device that you wear or is embedded into your forearm or something, and then 48 seconds later, an autonomous vehicle comes to your door, picks you up, and takes you exactly where you want to go. And if you want to have like a dollar off of every transaction from everybody going anywhere, that's a pretty good business to be. And that's certainly worth $500 million of anybody's money to try to get into.
Or they could take that money and put it into iTunes and really get that thing to sing.
Yeah. Give me 1% of it in cash, and I'll just go away completely.
Let's see. What else? This was such a fun week. Oh, the iPad mini came out. In fact, I owe it to you, or maybe it's your fault, Renee, because I saw your Instagram picture at the Apple store of the iPad mini 4, and I said, what, it's out? Lisa, let's go on a field trip. And we almost immediately drove up to the Apple store and bought one. Did they announce that was going to be out on whatever?
They announced at the event that it was totally overshadowed by the iPad Pro, but they mentioned en passant that the iPad Mini 4 was coming too, and that it would be available as soon as they could get the orders out. And you could order it that day, and they would ship it to you. And it arrived in stores about when it started arriving at people's homes.
Got it. So, unlike Andy, I had skipped the Mini 3, but I love the Mini. I had the 1 and the 2. I got the 2 because it was Retina, and I used the 2 a lot for a long time. And so I was actually very happy since I'd skipped 3 to get the new one. The screen is better, noticeably better, wider color gamut apparently. Touch ID, of course, is fabulous. I really like it. Is it exactly an Air 2 in a smaller case?
Almost. So it's got the, like you said, the wider color gamut. It's got the laminated screen, so the three layers are fused down to one. The only thing it doesn't have is the Apple A8X processor. It has an A8 processor, the same one that's in the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus. And that's mainly because the Apple A8X is a large processor. It's got 8 graphics cores instead of 4. They take up space and they're hotter, and you just don't have that space or that thermal capacity in a device as small as the iPad Mini 4.
Yeah.
But I'm like you, Leo. I love the Mini, but I also have an Air 2, and I use them for different things, and each one comes in handy.
This one, I got the small one because it'll be easy to travel with. I got LTE on it, so that I'll have always-on connection.
This is the field notes of iPad. It's not the sketchbook. It's not the notebook. It's the field notes.
And it may not be necessary since I'm getting the 6S Plus, but there's something. It's a different experience than using a phone.
It's really interesting. I had money put away because I thought I'd be buying a large phone last year too, and I wound up, that's the money that I used to buy the iPad Mini, because I decided that I don't really want – I want a larger phone, but I want it much larger than that for the reasons why I want a large phone. And iOS 9 is such a big payoff. It's Apple is so good at creating new features for an operating system that makes all existing stuff more valuable. I spent an hour and a half on a train yesterday – wrote an entire column on my iPad mini with a Microsoft mobile keyboard, got to the Boston Public Library where I was going to set up for another 2 or 3 hours of work, forgot that I actually had a MacBook with me, and just took out my iPad mini and the keyboard and kept right on working. And that's how good iOS 9 is, how much better the experience of actually writing and working on an iPad mini is now, just with a free software upgrade. So we're going to see a lot of great stuff over the next 3 months. And it's a much more interesting decision today than it was even just 3 months ago.
Is it the case that the like the split screen feature of iOS 9, if you you do need the new mini if you want to be able to resize windows. There's a few things you can't do.
If you want, yeah.
On the older one, you can still slide it in, but now the main app kind of grays out a little bit. So if I see a notification come up that someone is sending me an iMessage, I can swipe in from the right-hand side of the screen, and now I've got basically the phone version of iMessage, and I can read through and I can tap, I have a conversation with them for 30 seconds, and then when I swipe it out again, I'm back in Microsoft Word. Just the ability to simply have that going on, or at least swipe in, check an email, to find an email, copy a piece of data out of it, swipe it back in, and then paste it in, even without having both panes active at the same time, it's a huge win.
Yeah, and on the Mini 4, you can actually do all you can do everything you can do on the iPad Pro.
Yeah, you got 2 gigabytes of graphics. So the only trouble with the older iPads is they have a gigabyte of graphics, and every app is used to using. But every app has grown up in an environment where they had everything to themselves. They didn't have to share resources. So whether it's processing time, because Apple wants 60 frames per second, so whether they were using up all those frames or they were using up as much available RAM as they could, they just never had any constraints. So if you try to add those into an existing device, you'll just crash back to Springboard every time.
What is the criterion for getting into that sidebar? Because I noticed not all my apps are there.
You have to support size classes and you have to opt into it in Xcode. So you just flag your app saying that you're compatible.
So any app could be in there eventually.
And yeah, so Apple's done this in steps. So they had dynamic text and auto layout and then size classes. And size classes is what they use to support all the new bigger screens iPhones. So basically, instead of saying I'm an iPhone app or an iPad app, you say I'm a regular size class or a compact size class. And what they added now to support split view is that you can transform between those. So when you have a big window, it doesn't care anymore how big your device is. It cares how big the window is. So if it sees the space, it just goes, wow, I can fit regular size class. Oh, I'm getting smaller. I'm switching to a compact size class. So it's like having a little iPhone app in the side of your iPad, and then suddenly it's like having two iPad apps, and then suddenly it's like having a full iPad app. It's really clever. I'm happy how it works.
Yeah, in fact, Microsoft Word works on it. Yeah. Picture in Picture does not work on the older iPad mini, I believe, but it does work on the Mini 4.
It works on any 64-bit device, okay. So I think anything with an A7 in it or up.
Okay. So, I know they snuck it out. I know we're not getting a new Air 2. But the Mini 4, especially if you did as I did, I was really disappointed with the Mini 3. I thought that's not worth it. But if you skipped that last year, then this is an opportunity to get a new Mini. Not that there's anything wrong with the 3, Andy.
To get Touch ID. The 3 was to get Touch ID across the line and Apple Pay launched. Needed some. It took a while. I mean, like, people say Apple's the biggest company in the world, but it takes a while to take everything in an iPad Air 2 and shrink it down into an iPad Mini 4. And they just couldn't do it by last year, so they gave you Touch ID and Apple Pay.
To put a point on what I said a while back about, does this thing create opportunities and solve problems? I was fully aware of the likelihood there's going to be a big iPad Pro, and I try to look ahead. So would a 9.7-inch iPad in January or February make sense in a world in which at this time next year I have an iPad Pro? Decided that, yes, as a matter of fact, it doesn't make a difference that the iPad 3 is not that huge a leap from the iPad 2, given that I will now have the nice paperback book-sized iPad for times when I can't even be bothered to carry something big enough for a 13-inch screen.
iOS 9, is it time to upgrade or should you wait for a fix, an update, whatever?
If you have an iPad, I say absolutely.
Yeah. I haven't had any problems.
The wins are huge.
And the wins in iOS 9 are huge. And, you know, when you look at this is when I try and talk to people about Apple products, you have to remember, I think, that it's a software and a hardware that come together to make this ecosystem. And it's great. It really is. So if you have a device that can run iOS 9, you're going to see some improvements and some great new features. So do it.
iOS 9 downloaded by, in 1 week, more than 50% of active devices.
Yeah.
The more users than any other software released in Apple's history, says Phil Schiller. All you can say is wow. That's just you Apple people really like your operating system upgrade.
They made it easy. It was like 1 gigabyte, yeah. And
right, a lot more people could do it this time. Yeah.
You gotta have a real good reason not to. It's always smart to wait 2 weeks after a major OS release because there's always going to be bugs they don't discover. But you have to, after those 2 weeks have passed and all the bugs have been found and quashed, you have to have a really good reason. On the order of, I have an iPhone 4, I don't want to upgrade, and it's going to run like a slice of cheese if I try to install iOS 9 on this, to not go for an iOS update.
If you have a recent model, you should upgrade.
I put iOS 9 on my iPhone 4S and my iPad my iPad 2, and it worked fine. The biggest caveat I have for people is that if you have an app that is integral to you running your business, your household, or something else, just check the App Store and make sure that that app doesn't have any warnings on it, because there are a couple apps that say, we discovered a bug and we need to fix it, so don't update yet. And if that app is crucial to you, like if it runs your home security or your office, whatever, double check that first. And if you don't see that, then go right ahead.
Banking software is the same way. I got borked in a pretty bad way because I could not update my banking app, and I use it to keep an eye on my accounts and also to move money around while I'm traveling. So of course I'm traveling, and now the bank now requires an updated version, and I could not update it. And yeah, that's a lot of fun. So make sure you know what apps are critical, and make sure those are going to be safe.
You said that you need your app to move money around while you're traveling. Is that laundering money while you're on the run? Is that kind of what
Jim,
you're saying?
I fixed the problem. You're going to get the payment. Okay. And frankly, the video you sent me of the iPad Pro, you know, I'm looking for something more HD than your camcorder.
I just want to warn you, don't
when we
go
come back from commercial, I'll hide this resentment. But
southbound 128, don't carry that $30,000 in cash. They'll pull you over. They'll take it. They know. Hey, Xcode Ghost, let's talk about that briefly. We'd learned about this a while ago, that there was a version of Xcode floating around that had malware in it, and I'm not sure why you'd use a version of Xcode that you didn't get from Apple, although somebody said the Great Firewall of China blocks
it. Yeah, it is incredibly... So basically, if you're a developer in China, it could be incredibly slow, if not terrible, to try to download from Apple. So what you would do is search Google looking for Xcode, and you'd find a repository on a local Chinese site that would download quickly. And because people know that that's what happens, they got a hold of versions of Xcode and inserted malware into it that then at compile time inserts it into the apps.
How many apps ended up on the App Store with this? Mostly they were Chinese apps, but some significant Chinese apps, right?
Yeah, like WeChat.
WeChat, which is dominant. Software. There's an Uber in China. I can't remember the name, but that their app was affected.
What's scary about this is like, there's a lot of times that we'll tell people just, you know, make sure you download from trusted sources, keep Gatekeeper on. And this is all advice that could stop things like Xcode Ghost from working. But this is not in your control. This is under the developer's control. They're the ones who have to follow those principles. And you never know if the developer is using a consultant or a contractor, or they have a friend who passes them a bit of code. So, I mean, Apple can do things like trying to make a proxy in China that lets them download faster, or do things that make it much harder to turn off Gatekeeper when you're compiling software, or make it easier to check, because Apple put up an article today giving developers a way to easily check if their version of Xcode had been compromised. But at the end of the day, we're all in this together, and we all have to make sure that even if it's significantly inconvenient, if you're making software that your customers depend on, that you do everything, even if it's inconvenient, even if it's significantly inconvenient, to make sure that software is as rock solid and secure as possible.
39 apps infected. Those were all pulled immediately. I mean, it's easy to detect it once you know they're there, right?
So yeah, the cat and mouse game, though, the mouse always gets to move first. So that's why we see these stories.
Right. So they're gone. If you downloaded an infected version of WeChat, what should you do, and what could you be exposed to? Is it a complete takeover of your system?
No, it's relative. I say this, you know, with all due, it's relatively minor at this point. It's a little bit of data mining, and they're trying to pull what they can out of what you're doing with it.
Could have been a lot worse. That's a relief, actually.
Yeah, and the thing is that it's getting really hard to get information out of Apple's ecosystem. They really built it to be secure, and they built it to be secure in a way that, and Rich Mogul had a really good write-up on Tibbetts about this, that it's an economic war. Apple makes it expensive to try to attack iOS, and looking at things like compiler exploits is a way to try and more cheaply attack iOS.
Didi Kowadidi is the one I was thinking of. But by now, that's a car hailing app. NetEase, which is a music app. And WeChat's easily the biggest affected.
I wouldn't worry about it. China's not a very big market.
WatchOS 2.0, your thoughts. We're running out of time, so I'm going to move quickly through these final ones. But this was such a big news week.
Renee's piece is awesome. I read it this morning.
Well, everybody should just go to iMore.com and read the WatchOS. Give us a thumbnail.
Jim had an excellent – I've loved Jim's coverage of the Apple Watch and how it fits his lifestyle, and he had an excellent write-up on it too.
I went to Rennie's and read his too. So,
is it going to make me want to wear it again? Because I'll tell you, certainly there are people, and I absolutely acknowledge this, for whom this for your lifestyle is a great thing. But I don't need those notifications on my wrist. I actually use other exercise trackers that I feel like are more accurate, more flexible, and it does a lousy job of telling me what time it is because it's always off. So is this going to make me...
Or an excellent job, Leo, telling you to relax a little.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't worry. So is this going to make me change my mind on on the Apple Watch? Actually, I know one thing it will. I'll launch Uber on the watch, and I go, okay, now I got to wait a minute. So I'll pull out the phone, hail the car. So this will make a difference, presumably, if apps start moving to the watch, the launch time is much faster, right?
If your pain point was the launch speed of apps, it'd absolutely make your life better. But You're listing pain points that are fundamental to how the watch was designed.
Just the Apple Watch, to all smartwatches.
Yeah, so, I mean, this makes everything about it better, faster, stronger. It is, in many ways, like, and I hate saying this cliche, it's what the Apple Watch was meant to be. It rounds out every feature that they introduced and returns some they didn't have time to ship. Yeah. So it's sort of like the launch version is this Apple Watch hardware as it was meant to be. But if that still isn't for you, that still isn't for you. It makes everything about it better, faster, more convenient, but you still have to buy into the initial premise.
What's the killer feature, WatchOS 2?
Third-party custom complications.
Custom complications.
My biggest disappointment with the Apple Watch is that you have to interact with it before it will give you any information or be useful. So the ability to you mentioned Uber, I would be checking the Apple Watch app just to find out, okay, how many minutes out is the car right now? And so if they could add that as a complication, so I just do I see 4 minutes with a little Uber logo around it in the corner, that's perfect.
How are we seeing third-party complications yet?
Yeah.
There are a couple that are out,
Like what?
Carrot weather.
So, so you can get snotty complications. Good. Okay.
That's right.
Complication snark.
I think Dark Skies is updated.
Like that.
Good.
There's going to be a lot. I mean, they have to push them out as fast as the App Store will let them.
Yeah.
And for the only problem with the watch stuff right now is that iOS 9 is launching at the same time, and developers, often indie developers, have limited resources that they've got to decide between getting their apps updated for iOS 9 and getting their watches updated. And a lot, very rightly, prioritized iOS 9. If they even just move, and some people say it's super, super easy. Some people say it takes a little longer. But even if they move the app to living on the watch, it's a significant boost for the customers because it just launches so much faster and is so much more responsive.
Jim, is time travel a big deal for you, or does that get you all hot?
Time travel was pretty cool. I mean
it's cool, I grant you.
Yeah. But, you know, for me, the watch is about a lot about fitness, too. You know, I'm looking at that. And, you know, that's important to me. And like you mentioned earlier, the accuracy of fitness, I find the Apple Watch to be very accurate. I use it all the time for fitness and for tracking. And that's very important.
You must walk or run.
I walk and... Yeah. I do the other workout, which is, lifting some weights. And
it doesn't know you're lifting weights, though.
No, but it knows, it tracks your heart rate.
Right.
So it knows that you're exerting.
Right.
It will track and track calories and things based on, how much your heart rate goes up.
I'm going to put it back on and strap it on and wear it because I got the new, when the new iPhone comes, and wear it for a while and give it another shot.
But that points out another advantage of watchOS 2.0. Developers can actually get access to accelerometers and all that, and heart rate and all that sort of data. So although the built-in apps don't really support weightlifting, if someone wanted to create a weightlifting app that will help you track your reps, track your whatever the things that people who lift weights want to track, they can actually get access to the hardware and actually make that happen.
Now, of Georgia Dow and Serenity Caldwell, who's the better artist, do you think?
Georgia does not draw at all, so Serenity.
But even I know that that's Cartman, so at least I can recognize that.
Well, those are the ones I sent them.
Oh, this is you drawing?
Yes.
Oh. Okay, never mind.
I took the screenshots before they evaporated.
These are the multicolor sketches.
I love them.
Yeah.
Serenity's got serious art chops, though.
I realize the real point of the Apple Watch is to announce to the world that you are one of the anointed.
It's a convenience, Leo. And again, like I talked to my sister about it because she's been wearing one for a few months now, and she's a psychologist on the floor at a major hospital. And she said it's so convenient for her that she actually has time to have lunch now. And that sounds silly, but that is such an important thing
for her. That's huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, though, for most people, it's really so you can start up a conversation and, you know, say, don't we love Apple? Yeah, we love Apple. Yeah.
I love Apple stainless steel. How much do you love Apple?
I have yet to meet somebody with gold. Maybe I just don't hang around in the right.
You get the impression that Apple's a little bit ashamed that they even came up with the gold one. It had a big presence at the intro last year, but you just don't. You catch nobody wearing a gold watch. They don't mention it.
One in Palo Alto.
Did you really? It was on Tim Cook's wrist.
No, it was a group of people who I think were retired hardware engineers or CEOs or something, and they were talking about which gold model they gotten.
Oh Lord, that is a douchebag conversation.
Well, no, but I mean, they would be talking about their Panerais or their Rolexes if it wasn't.
Yeah, it's going to be anyway. So
it bothers me that the screen isn't made out of gold too. That's I want to show off that I can have the entire thing made out of gold if I wanted to.
I was at Santana Rolio. I went into a restaurant and there was a Lamborghini Aventador out front, and I walked out and there was a Lamborghini Rebenton in front of it. Yeah. Everyone lives in the same neighborhood.
That's how Palo Alto is. It's very odd that way. Sprint and T-Mobile will actually start selling the Apple Watch in their stores September 25th. So you can go, when you go pick up your new iPhone, you can pick up an Apple Watch to go along with it.
I'm interested to see what happens come Christmas with those, come the holiday season.
They're not going to release a new watch for a while, right?
It's going to be interesting because Apple has decoupled. Usually you wait a year, and with the iPhone, you wait a year and you get new software to go with the new hardware. But this has just been WatchOS 2 may not be a ginormous update, but it's only 5 months in. They're revving this thing super fast.
Right.
Because you think about it, was a year ago that they introduced it, but it only shipped in April. And now September, we have an update already and there's no new hardware to go with it. And you know, Andy was talking about this earlier. There's no new iPad Air this year and there wasn't a significantly new iPad Mini. So maybe Apple's saying that not every hardware product has to be revved every year.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing to say too, because you know, they need to focus and they need to focus on iPhone. And then if you think about all the other projects that they have, like the car and you know, the TV and you know, then that's a lot of things that need to be completed, and they can't possibly do that every year. Not with all of those products.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, your picks of the week, my friends, as we wrap up this edition of Mac Break Weekly. Jim Dalrymple from loopinsight.com, Renee Ritchie from imore.com, Andy Inoko from the Chicago Sun-Times. Always great. Really great panel. I am bathed in the warm, relaxing glow of your intelligence. Our show today brought to you, and the jackhammer. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom. Okay, if you are starting a business or if you have a family there are lots of reasons you might want to have a lawyer. Problem is, as we all know, lawyers cost you money. You kind of don't even want to walk into the office because you know the clock starts ticking like when he senses your presence 3 feet away. I mean, it's expensive. The good news is not everything has to be done in a lawyer's office. In fact, a lot of the things that you would like to do you can do very easily if you have somebody to help you, like LegalZoom.com. For instance, making your last will and testament. You need one for your family. You really do. If you don't have a last will, You've got to do it. I know nobody wants to think about this, but trust me, it is you know you need to do it. You've been putting it off. Starts at $69. And that's one of the things I love about LegalZoom. There's no guesswork. You go into a lawyer's office, you have no idea how many hours it's going to take, how much it's going to cost you. You can feel viscerally the clock ticking. Not with LegalZoom. You know, complete transparency. You can read reviews. You'll get the price right up front, so you know exactly what you're getting. They don't charge you by the hour. If you're starting a business, great place to go to start your business. Get that LLC or the S-Corp or the C-Corp. Now, you may say, well, what's the difference? You can also talk to a lawyer. Now, this is the best thing. You say, well, do I need it? I want to incorporate, but what's the difference in an LLC and a S-Corp? LegalZoom, if you need legal advice, has a network of independent attorneys that can provide straightforward guidance in most states. You'll see reviews, profiles, you pick the attorney, and the rate is pre-negotiated and, again, transparent, you know, up front. This is the best thing in the world. LegalZoom is not a law firm. That's why they're so affordable, but they give you what you need to get the work done. I love LegalZoom. You'll love it, too, and I know you've got stuff you want to do. Maybe you trademark that logo or the company name or make that will, or you got to do it. But don't let those legal hurdles or the expenses stop you. It's so easy. LegalZoom.com. And to let them know you heard this on Mac Break Weekly and to give you a little incentive, $10 off when you use the offer code MBW in the referral box at checkout. LegalZoom.com. Don't forget to use the offer code MBW and save. LegalZoom. We love them. Let's see. Who wants to go first? Show of hands here. We'll go left. Yeah, there's Andy Nanko. Yes, sir.
One quick one and one very important one. I saw The Martian yesterday, the movie.
And?
It's really, really good. if you're a fan, it's slightly different from the book, but in a way that makes it make more sense for the movie. If you love the book, the tone is all there. The characterizations are a lot more interesting than what are in the book. And I would also, one of the reasons why I'm making this a pick is that maybe you actually do want to see this in 3D, because it's an example of a movie where the 3D is so good you don't notice you're watching a 3D movie. It just makes it more immersive. It makes it more, it's done very, very thoughtfully. So high recommendation. I thought it was terrific. The second one, though, is something that I'm really going to really strongly suggest that you install on your phones like today. The American Red Cross has a collection of mobile apps that are absolutely fantastic. There's an app for instance, first aid. And so if you're walking down the street and you see someone collapse, you will want to help, and maybe you will take out your phone and try to Google, what do I do if someone collapses, and Google tries its best to make sure that the emergency information is at the top, but you don't know where it's coming from. And you, in this sense, you might not know where to go for that. Fire up the first aid app. It will say, here's how you attend to someone like this. Here's how you attend to someone who's in diabetic shock. Here's how you attend to somebody who seems to be bleeding. With clear step-by-step stuff and videos. And then underneath that, a lot more explanation if you want to dive into this and find out what that stuff does. There's an app for emergency preparedness so that if you get hurricanes where you live, or tornadoes or earthquakes, you can get this, set up this app, tell it where you live, tell them where your loved ones are. And every time there's an alert where you need to get ready for something bad that's happening, it will give you these alerts. It'll tell you what to do. But also, again, maybe you have relatives that are in the San Francisco area. I mean, we don't get earthquakes here in New England. That doesn't mean that if I had a loved one who was in a tornado alley, who was in an earthquake zone, I would want to know that there's bad stuff going to happen to their house, and maybe I can get in touch with them and help them out with that. And there are apps for pet safety, for pet health, on and on and on and on. You get these apps for free. You install them. They're there and they're ready. Launch them when you install them, because you have to accept, you know, I understand I'm getting stuff from an app and not from an actual live medical professional that's standing here next to my phone helping me. And when you need it, it's going to be right there. And they are really high quality apps. Get the whole suite.
That's great. That's a very useful tip. Thank you.
Yep.
I will do that when my new phone comes on Friday. Do you want to do a pick, Jim? You don't have to.
I want to do a music pick.
Yeah.
Because that's what I do.
Yeah.
I'm going to do one of the original great thrash metal bands. Megadeth.
Megadeth! That's Death with a D-E-T-H, right?
Or, yes.
Yeah, okay.
They've got a new album coming out soon. The bass player, David Ellefson, has been a good friend of mine for many years, and I love their music. I have everything that they've ever put out. Love them. So I can't wait for the new album. It's going to be great.
30 years in the making. Megadeth.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
I will go see them, too.
Okay.
And I'll take you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I got the earplugs, I guess. I guess I'm ready. They got any catchy tunes you can sing along with?
All kinds of them.
Hangar 18 is pretty catchy.
Hangar 18.
Yeah.
You're a Megadeth fan, Jason Howell?
Oh, yeah. Big fan.
Megadeth is okay, but they're only 1/10 as rockin' as Gigadeth.
Times have changed. Maybe they ought to upgrade.
See, Jason and I will go see Megadeth.
Oh, you? Yeah, I'm there. I'm already there. Right now, I'm waiting for you to arrive.
Hangar.
That's how there I am.
Hangar Say 18. Hi to Dave for me. From the immortal album Rust in Peace. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Saw Megadeth a few years ago, and it was such a long time coming, and they were so incredible live. It was such a great show.
How old are they now? Are they like 60-year-old heavy metal rockers?
I don't think they're that old.
Yeah, they're probably the 50s, I would guess.
They're my age. Almost 60. All right, Megadeth, baby, new album. We've been waiting for it. It's exciting. How about you, Renee Ritchie? What's your pick of the week?
So I have two. I was going to pick the iPad Mini 4 because I wasn't sure we were going to talk about it or not. And I just posted my review of
it. So you did buy one at that that Instagram picture was of you purchasing one.
Yes. Yeah, and I posted my review earlier today. And it's something that surprised me because I thought I would like it. But I've long since contented myself with the iPad Air. I used to be a Mini user, but now I have the iPhone 6 Plus. So
right.
I wasn't certain I really need a Mini. And the Air is just so big and the screen was so beautiful. But I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. I liked it. It should be iPad-mini-4-review, but I was shocked at how much I liked it. It was just fantastic. The screen, you really have to see it. It does look every bit as good as the iPad Air 2.
I thought so. It was noticeably better than my old Mini. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the reds, the magentas, the purples, all of them look fantastic now because it's a fused screen. You no longer have the same side of refraction on it. And because it's got an anti-glare coating on it, you don't get the same kind of reflections either. So it creates a much more pleasurable viewing experience. And you get all the power of the A8 processor in it, and you get the split view. So if you want to multitask, I'm going to be doing a lot of traveling. And I was going to just bring my iPad Air with me. But when you pick this up, I went back to my iPad Mini 3, and I'm not saying this to hurt anybody's feelings. It felt like a brick for a second because that's how your brain works. Your brain instantly adapts to whatever the last thing you were holding with, and it feels either too light or too heavy. And I didn't realize how much lighter they'd made it because thinness is never important. Thinness is just a side effect of lightness. And Apple really believes that lightness is a key part of usability because you can
it is for the iPad because you're holding it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're holding it above your head when you read or you're holding it on your lap, and they want to make it as light as possible. And I bought the Wi-Fi one because I didn't think I was going to do much with it other than put it on my shelf behind me. But I'm taking it back and swapping it for the cellular one because I want to travel with it.
Yeah, that was my thinking as well. This is a perfect travel size.
And it's got the faster MIMO Wi-Fi and the faster LTE and it just one thing after the camera. I mean, they're not iPhone 6S quality, but for an iPad.
Is it iPhone 6 quality?
No, it's the same as the iPad Air, which is sort of around iPhone 5. It's an 8-megapixel sensor, but it doesn't have all the bells and whistles of the iPhone camera. I really, really liked it. And I have a quick secondary self-serving pick, and that Srinity Caldwell took the iOS 9 and watchOS 2 reviews and kindly bundled them up into an ebook for us. We could put them up on the iBook store because you're looking. She also put up she included her FAQs in there and a bunch of other stuff. So you're looking at, I forget how big it was, 70,000 words or something at the end. And some people just said it was easier them to read in book format. Yeah. So we wanted to see if that was workable.
There you
go. And she's an ebook wizard.
So you go to iTunes and search for iMore Editors. Yeah. You'll find all of the iMore, the music book as well. I think that's smart of you, actually.
We're trying, very smart. Leo.
Yeah. Well, it's just convenient. $1.99, it's just convenient. It's the new magazine. So, you know, we've talked a lot about two-factor authentication. I hope you're using it. And I think when you first put two-factor authentication on your Google account or your Microsoft account or Twitter or Facebook, and almost everybody's doing it, the default thing is to go out and get the Google brand authenticator, which is free and downloadable. The problem with the Google authenticator is, and the way these apps work, you should know, is you get a secret number that only your app knows. And they hash that secret number with the current time and generate a 6-digit code. Meanwhile, Google, back at the Googleplex or Microsoft or whoever, is doing the same thing. Their clock's close to yours. So for 30 seconds, you have a matching 6-digit number. That's the one that the website or the app will ask for as authentication. The problem with the Google Authenticator is if you get a new phone or you install it somewhere else, you have to find out what that secret number is. Usually you enter it by a QR code, but the number is gone, and you kind of have to start setting it up all over again. I found a really great app that's free called Authy that does the same thing as the Google Authenticator, but allows you to have a cross-platform solution. Get a new phone, no problem. Install Authy, log in. You have a super secret passphrase and all of that, and now all of your authenticator stuff, all of your apps and stuff is there. The other thing, and I discovered this when I got the new Mini, is the authentication codes also show up in the notification pane when you pull it down. So it's very convenient if you're in an app and you need an authentication code. You swipe down, there's the code, you enter it, and you're gone, and you're good to go. This is a really good app. They've done a very nice job of it. And, you know, it adds, and I'll have to ask Steve about this. I mean, it adds one level of insecurity because they're going to store your secret number on the Authy servers. That's how it works cross-platform. But I have to say the convenience of that really outweighs everything else from my point of view. I trust them. They've done a nice job. So it's free, Authy.com. And if you go to the /personal, you'll see it works on iOS, Android, BlackBerry, OS 10, Windows, and Linux. That's everywhere I want to have an authenticator. So if you've been using Google Authenticator, this is a nice alternative. And it is second factor. It's not somebody's making the point in the chat room, which is absolutely true. It's not like you're giving away the keys to the kingdom. It's just the authentication code. Authy, Authy. And I'll be doing a nice installing it immediately on the new phone. I'm very excited. Very excited. I'm also excited to see Jim Dalrymple at the AC/DC concert. And if on the next Mac Break Weekly I'm shouting, you'll know I forgot my earplugs. You wouldn't want to wear hearing aids at an AC/DC concert, I'm thinking.
Usually afterward.
Later. Thank you, Jim, for being here. I think we just lost his signal, I'm sorry to say. Jim Dalrymple, loopinsight.com, at J Dalrymple on the Twitter. We love having you, and thank you for giving us a firsthand report on those new iPhones so we get even more excited. Thank you also, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, for all your great work at iMore and for joining us each and every week. And the podcast, too, let's not forget, Debug and the others, they're all available through iMore.com on your favorite podcast app. Have people complained to you that the new Apple podcast app doesn't go full screen?
Yes, relentlessly, and I've filed all the radars.
So
I've also filed radars for there no longer being hoodies at the new campus store.
So. Yeah, the campus store is now just an Apple store.
God. With a couple of t-shirts and mugs.
It's kind of a bummer.
All the fun stuff.
Yeah, it used to be a company store.
Not only that, but you go to the Apple store because you wanted to get the t-shirt that said, I visited the mothership.
Yeah.
Yes.
Damn them.
Oh, well.
Hopefully this will be
too much frivolity in this world, apparently. There are too many people smiling and happy. Thank God they did something about that.
But I do want to thank Apple for one thing, and I think this probably is Steve at iTunes who had some say in this because he's
awesome.
Very nice to me. If you ask Siri for help about things she can do in the podcast section, it mentions Twit. Oh. Yes, that is one of the things you can do. You can listen to Twit.
Yeah, so, their editors are amazing.
Yes,
they really care.
Thank you, iTunes guys and gals. And, you know, you don't have to use the Apple Podcast app. There's lots of ways to listen to our shows. You can listen on the Twit apps, quite a few of them, and more coming. We're working on our own official apps, which should be out by the end of the year for iOS and Android. We've got a new app coming to a Windows Phone, thanks to Dimitri Lee Allen, based on our new API. We'll be working on lots more, too. So if you can't be here live every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC, please listen to an on-demand version. You can even get it from the website, twit.tv/mbw. Thank you, Renee. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Mr. Inotko from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Thanks, Leo.
I'm Leo Laporte. Now, back to work, because you know what? Break time is over.